Do. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Boom, and we're live, Mark Delagrate.
What up?
Most of the time, if you and I are talking on the microphone, it's when you're in the truck and I'm talking to you, and you know, and like right before a big fight, people don't realize like you're the guy I talk to.
Yeah, man. A lot of shit talking going
on. Do a lot of shit talking. A lot of things that we probably shouldn't say.
Luckily, it doesn't make the broadcast. So
well, good. When that one got leaked, when Aldo was about to fight Connor,
yeah,
and I said he does not look good. I said he looks nervous as fuck.
I remember
his body looks flat.
Soft and flat.
Yeah, and then he got flatlined.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
you were right.
I was right in that regard.
That did make program, didn't it?
Well, people, what happened was somebody recorded it. Because I was talking to you, I think, and yeah. I was talking to Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, somebody just decided to be a little twat.
Dude, I'm paranoid shit. In that truck sometimes.
You have to be
push
now.
The wrong fucking button. And I'm going to be talking shit to you or Marin or something.
Well, that was one where it was interesting. I was like, oh, okay. Well, somebody's a fucking asshole. Like, you're privy to this sort of inside banter. To like to release that like and make it public. I would never say that publicly, so I was very upset that they did that.
Yeah,
but it was true, honest.
True. No, you're right.
It was honest. He did look like shit, but damn, he looked good last weekend.
He looked unbelievable.
Isn't that
happy
crazy?
For him, man. I love
very
Jeremy Stevens. I love Jeremy Stevens. Great guy. I mean, you know, we're cool with everybody. You know,
yeah,
we work for the company. You got to get to know everybody. You got to be cool with everybody. But it was good to see Jose Aldo back on top, man. He needed that bad, dude.
Well, when someone ever, I'm always happy when someone wins with a liver shot.
Oh,
because it's such a, it's one of those weird punches. Like, you'll see two guys, and they exchange good shots to the body, and they seem like they have no effect. You know, obviously they hurt, but they'll deal with it and keep fighting. And then every now and then you see whap, and then
yeah,
you see, man, that liver shot where the legs go out, the body gives in. It's like, man, that is crazy that we have this one area that sometimes works.
Yep.
Because sometimes it doesn't work. Right?
That's right.
A liver shot's weird.
Man, and it's delayed. That's the funniest part about it. There's like a split second delay where you're like, I got this.
Yeah.
And you just fold over. If you saw that too, like there was a body shot that he threw. He threw like a right hand to the body and then the left lever shot. So I think it's kind of like, you know, you take the first punch, you're like, and then you brace and you got it. And then you relax for a second. And that's when your diaphragm and your liver starts vibrating.
I wish it made sense. Well, here it is right here. We can see it again.
Weird video.
Yeah, watch. He throws the right hand to the body first.
What does he got?
There it is, and there it is.
Boom.
Double body shot.
Yeah.
And Jeremy's a banger, too, man. That's a tough dude, man, to get dropped from a body shot.
Yeah, and to make that face, too.
You
it
can't
must
hide
hurt
it
so bad.
Yeah, man.
Well, Kevin Ross is the only guy that I've ever seen hide it. Kevin Ross he was fighting in Bellator, not his last fight, but maybe the previous fight. And he got hit in the first round with a spinning back kick right in the liver. And he just went like this.
Yeah.
You can see he just kept moving. And he said he was in ultimate agony.
Absolutely.
But he didn't show shit. And his opponent didn't know. I mean, he really pulled it off. He really pulled it off. He figured out how to just... He's so mentally strong, though, that guy.
Crazy.
He just figured out how to suck it up and just deal with the pain.
It's tough to do in kickboxing and boxing, too, because it's not like you can jump guard or stall or
grapple. Right.
Like,
yeah.
You can't hide that. You know, you get hit like that, and you got to keep fighting. It's
especially
not like
kickboxing as opposed to Muay Thai. You can't even really clinch.
Right, exactly, especially with these new rules. With
do you like that? Do you like
no.
I'm
glad
don't
you
either.
Asked. I don't like it. It's not the art, you know? I think everything that's going on, you know, with... You know, these new rules, even when K-1 first came out and all that, it's kind of like what I consider like a takeoff of Muay Thai. It's not Muay Thai, but they call it Muay Thai. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not Muay Thai. You know, it's not the real art.
K-1 was like the Japanese said, not enough brain damage.
Yeah.
Not enough. You need more brain damage.
And I think they just sucked at the clinch, which because the Thais are so good at it. And they wanted to give themselves a chance to actually compete with like some of the best in the world. So they said, all right, let's limit their weapons.
Isn't that interesting? Because wouldn't you think that they would just learn the clinch?
Man, I wish they would. You know, that's one of the most intricate parts of Muay Thai. That's where all the gambling goes. That's where all the points come from. You can punch the shit out of somebody and you get nowhere, and then you start clinching and the knees start coming and the little turnovers and trips.
Mm-hmm.
The Thais love that shit, man. That's the real art. There's so much grappling involved in Thai boxing that's overlooked, you know, and to have rules that take away grappling, take away clinch work – makes no sense to me. It's half the art at that point.
It's also a really underappreciated thing in terms of like how they score it. Like we don't score the same way. Like if you're watching a Thai fight, and if you were an American, you would be like, there's a bunch of hugging. Yeah, you got off a couple of knees, but the other guy hit him with some good right hands and a good jab.
So funny you say that. I just had this lesson with my students the other night, you know, doing let's talk about the rules, how to win the judges, so to say, you know, and the Dutch rules are different than the Thai rules, and America is kind of fucked up and lost in between all of it. You know, like the Dutch consider like a hand block, like if you block with your hands like this, it's a block in Holland. The Thais, that's not a block. That's a point. Like, you get the point, you know?
Really?
Yeah, man. It's different. You have to block with your legs in Thai box in order to show that you've blocked and nullified the attack, you know?
Really?
And the points, like, the punches score big in Holland. Low kicks score big. And they mean shit to the Thais. You could punch the shit out of somebody for a full round and then just get two clean body kicks off. And all the Thais like, oh, hey, you got that. And the gambling starts going. So a lot of these foreigners go to Thailand and they think they're doing well and then they lose decisions and they wonder why. It's because they don't understand the judging. They don't understand the rules. Wow. And vice versa. The Thais go to Holland and, you know, they think they're doing well and the guy's punching the shit out of them and they're kind of blocking partially and then they lose decisions as well. So it's very different between the judging and the scoring between Dutch kickboxing and real Muay Thai. Very different.
Yeah, I remember when Ramon Dekker was fighting over in Thailand, and one of the things that he shocked a lot of those guys was with his hand techniques.
Yep.
And he was able to close the distance and just unleash a barrage of explosive knockout punches and take guys out, where I think they'd become more accustomed to that not happening.
Very true. Yeah.
They also become accustomed to not being assaulted in the first round.
Very much so. I remember one of the fights I had early in my career in Thailand. I was so excited to be fighting at a big fair, big festival, fighting this big name Thai, and I threw an elbow in the first round. You know, and because I had the opportunity to throw the elbow, I threw the elbow, and, you know, I landed, and the guy wiped his, you know, put his glove up to his head to see if he was bleeding, and he gave me that mean look and nodded, and it was game on from there. And I went back to the corner, and my Thai trainers were yelling at me, like, the fuck are you doing? You throw elbow. I was like, elbow's illegal, right? He goes, yeah, but not first round. Now he angry you. I was like, what the fuck?
Now he angry you.
Thai-glish. Half Thai, half
Is
English.
Is that bad?
Dude, it was. Apparently, I was just excited to be fighting in Thailand using elbows because a lot of times in the States, you know, we can't use them and the rules are limited. And I was in Thailand and it was a festival at night and the fucking lights are on and the Thais are betting. And I was like, game on. Let's go.
That's
Trainers
so
were mad at
weird.
Me for throwing the elbow. And then there was other fights where I had where they were like, oh, be careful for elbow. This festival fight. No doctor here. Hospital far away. And I was like, dude, it's like you guys are fucking my head all up.
No,
like,
doctor here. No doctor far away.
I remember my trainer saying that. He's like, be careful for elbow. I was like, thanks, fucking tips. Like, I know, watch out for elbows. He's like, yeah, but no doctor here, not stadium. This festival. Hospital, Long Pier Ban, oh, very far.
Dude, you got such a good Thai
dude,
accent.
Dude, my Thai-glish is on point, bro. Don't even go there. Don't even go there.
It's so funny.
Don't make me do a lady boy.
With a heavy Boston accent.
Dude, you ever hear Stitch Duran speak Thai? Stitch did some R&R in the service, like in Thailand. And man, like, you know, you say like, Sawat Dee Kap. That's like the proper. He's like, man, Sawat Dee Kap. He like speaks like a Thai essay, dude. It's hilarious, dude. It's the funniest thing, man.
How do you say thank you again?
Kap Khun Kap.
Kap Khun Krab, right? Kap Khun,
yeah, if you roll the R's, it's like real, like almost like aristocratal. Like you stick out like a sore thumb if you're a white dude.
But women
like
don't
that.
Say that. They say Kap Khun Kra.
Ka, yeah. Ka is like the feminine polite particle. Like, so to say, so Kap, like Krup, it looks like K-R-U-P, but it's actually the Kap. That's the male polite particle. Ka.
And then everybody, Kra. Oh, dude, they all stretch everything out.
Everything is like, oh, I go with you now.
Yeah.
Where you go, mister?
Yeah,
like,
why?
It's just like, I don't know. It's the twang, I guess.
Yeah.
It's that Thai twang.
They're the nicest people on earth.
They're sweet. They're sweet.
They're so
man.
Nice, man.
Not all of them. It's the land of smiles, but you'll find some fucking frowns here and there, I'll tell you that much, dude.
Of course. Well, especially in the fight game.
Yeah.
So there's no getting around the fight game.
No. Nope.
You're going to have some mean motherfuckers.
Very true. But the fighters are cool though, man. I remember one of my first fights in Thailand. Well, at least my Raja Damnern fight in 2003. I had breakfast with my opponent, and it was like,
really?
Super chill. Like, we weighed in butt naked next to each other, which was awkward as fuck. But you know, like, do we really have to be naked? And the Thai's like, yeah, you got to get down, bro. And I was like, I don't want to get naked. I'm on weight. Don't worry. I'll leave my underwear. they're like, no, underwear off. That's how we do it at Raja Damnern Stadium. And I was like, shit. So wow. Butt naked, weighted my opponent. Went next door and had breakfast with him, shooting the shit. It's kind of wow. cool, Nick. But it is a cool place, man. I remember the first time I went to Thailand, I came home and I was homesick. And I was fucked up, dude. It felt weird. I was like, I felt like lonely and lost. And I had family here. Like, you know, I was with my wife now, I was with her at the time. We weren't married at the time. But, you know, I had family, I had friends. I was very much connected. You know, old school Sicilian family, Boston based, you know, deep roots. And I just felt awkward and weird. I was like, away from home. I was like homesick.
You missed Thailand.
I missed Thailand. My very first trip. I remember leaving the airport and I was driving and I had nothing but smiles for like a month and a half straight. And I was leaving Logan Airport in Boston and some truck driver cut me off and stuck his head out the window. I was like, fuck you, man. Gave me the finger. I was like, dude, chill. Like, he like wanted to get out and fight. And I was like, bro, I'll snap your neck, but I don't want to fight nobody. Like, I'm Buddha now. Like, I like this vibe. I want to go back to Thailand. Like, it was weird, man. It was definitely trippy though, but something brought me, something very deep, like, and spiritual brought me to Thailand. Brought me to the kingdom.
That is the opposite way I feel about Boston. When I go back to Boston and I see hostility, I smile. I'm like, I remember this.
Right?
And people cut people off. You fucking queer! Like, oh yeah, so, come on, this is where I grew up.
It is awesome. And there's something unique about Boston people. I mean, I'm telling you, man, I've told this to people, like, you know, when you got to get up at fucking 6 in the morning to shovel 17 inches of snow off your fucking frozen windshield to go to work and sit in traffic and beep and be angry at each other, like, just makes a different person, you know.
Well, it definitely makes a different sense of humor,
for sure.
You know, like, there's a certain connection that I have to those Northeast comedians.
Yeah,
guys like Bill Burr. Like, Bill and I did a show Wednesday night, and it's like, whenever I'm around a guy from Boston, it's like, it's so obvious. It's like there's a certain, and there's also a certain respect for people's attention span.
Very much.
Because one of the good things about starting out in Boston was, like, people didn't give a fuck. Like, they don't have any time for your dilly-dallying up there. You better come with the jokes, cunt.
So true, man. First trip to L.A., or no, it was L.A., San Francisco, I think, at the time when I was younger. Went to, like, some random sandwich shop. I was like, I'm hungry. I was like, give me one of those joints right there. And the guy, like, was taking his time. And I was like, bro, I'm in a fucking rush. And, like, and my buddy was like, dude, watch the F-bombs. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, just watch the F-bombs. So the guy comes out with the sandwich, and it was this little fucking peanut half sandwich. I go, what the fuck am I going to do with that? And he's like, I'm sorry. Like, I was like, where's the other half? And he's like, that's it, sir. And I was like, bro, I need another fucking sandwich. He's like, I'm going to have to charge you for it. And I was like, charge me, do whatever you got to do, bro. I'm fucking hungry. And like, literally everybody behind me in line just started dispersing and like left the store. And my buddy was like, bro, I can't take you anywhere around here.
Really?
It was
rough,
man.
How old were you back then?
Probably maybe 20 years old, maybe.
Yeah, see, that's a different Mark De La Grotte and a different San Francisco.
Very true.
San Francisco was like super calm, lefty. Back then. Now San Francisco is different. San Francisco is homeless people projectile shitting into the streets. Yeah.
I just
really expensive real estate and tech dorts who speak in, they have a specific language in San Francisco.
Really?
It's called upspeak.
Is that a fact?
Yeah. This is how I describe it as a language, but tech people in San Francisco, and if you're a tech person in San Francisco and you do this, stop it. Because they do this. They talk to you. Like, here's the deal. Man. Like, what we're trying to do with our startup.
Stop it, please.
So the end of all, you know, the car at the car.
Yeah.
When the tie, that's talk the like that.
San Francisco twang.
San Francisco's version of that is upspeak.
Fuck, dude.
Everything they do at the end goes up. Oh, so what we're trying to, and what it is like they're faking it. They're trying to, like, when you want to pretend to be intelligent or tech savvy or in, and it's a very left-wing thing, too. It's only people who are super liberal and super progressive. Like, you couldn't talk like that and go, Donald Trump, although he's problematic, has some really good points in regards to business. Like, you couldn't say that.
Bro, please stop.
There was a lot of good.
I've heard enough.
A lot of good combat sports come out of San Francisco.
Absolutely,
though.
Man.
Think about like the history of like you got the Gracie Baja contingent up there.
Yep.
You know, Hoff Gracie is got one of the like Northern California.
The
they
Bay
have one
Area
of the
is just
best
saturated.
Areas.
Yeah, it's
and
awesome
killers.
For martial arts, yeah.
Dave Terrell, yep. The Diaz brothers, obviously Caesar
yep.
Gracie.
Yep.
And then you had Alex Gong used to be up
John,
there.
I was just gonna say the Fairtex crew, that mm-hmm. old school Fairtex crew. Alex Gong, Johnson on Fairtex.
Did they ever catch the guy who killed him?
I don't. Yeah, I think he killed himself. Actually,
no,
I think he,
no. Alex Gong got killed in someone. Someone did something, and he went out, like someone would fuck with his car or something
yeah.
like that, and
somebody
he went
hit
outside,
his car, yeah.
and someone murdered him.
The way I heard it was he was training in the gym, and somebody sideswiped or hit his car or
something.
There was
like
something
that.
Like that. He ran down the street after him in a pair of fucking boxing gloves,
mm-hmm.
which probably wasn't, you know, I mean, obviously you see some fucking savage running up to your window
yeah.
with a pair of boxing gloves on. So the guy shot him.
Yeah.
But I think the guy had some mental history, and he was like – you know, he was unstable or something like that. And from what I understood, I thought the guy actually committed suicide.
There it is. Suspect. Yep. You're right.
Yeah,
suspect
I think
in kickboxer shooting
after.
Killed himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
man.
Fucked up, man. What a waste, though, huh?
Yeah. Guy crashed into his parked car, so he chafed after
there
him.
It is. Yeah. I didn't. I just fucking, I thought I was making shit up for a minute there. Nah, man. That's sad, man. He was a great fighter, man. I remember watching, like, remember, like, ISK, like, kickboxing mm-hmm. back in the day when, like, the Fairtex crew from Chandler, mm-hmm. Arizona.
Yeah.
You know, who's the big guy? Ganyao.
Yeah.
Johnson on Fairtex. N yep. Fairtex. Who's the other guy? Who's the smaller guy, too? I forget his name. I'm drawing a blank. But that whole Fairtex crew, man, back in the day, man, they came from Thailand and mm-hmm. just fucking threw up, like, this aluminum building and Chandler, Arizona in the desert and just started fucking flying people in to fucking learn Muay Thai. And they were kicking ass, dude. They kicked everybody's ass back in the day, that ISK kickboxing scene.
Well, when you started fighting, there were very few people that were like formally trained in Muay Thai in our area, in the Boston area. Like,
very true.
We knew Rich Vasipoli.
Oh, man, what a name. Remember
yeah.
him? He died in a triathlon, too,
yeah.
didn't he? Got kicked in the head while he was swimming and drowned.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy, man. Of all the shit you did in your life, you fucking got kicked by a swimmer and drowned.
Yeah, and he was like, you know, he was done fighting. He was
yep.
in his 40s.
Yeah, exactly. He was chilling at the time.
So it's funny
you say that, man, because back in the day, I thought about this coming out here. You know, I remember the first pair of Muay Thai shorts I saw. I was like, dude, that's funky, those
yeah.
weird letters on the front. Like, and it was, I don't know if you remember a guy named Ed Bavalok, I think his name was, Kimakai. He's in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Sitya Tong guy, too.
I remember that name.
Yeah, man. He was like, you know, I remember back in the day, he was one of the first guys in the area to have a pair of Muay Thai shorts, and he was training with Dana Rosenblatt, Joe
yeah.
Lake.
Yeah.
Remember that whole crew? It's funny
sure.
because we have similar backgrounds in martial arts in terms of Boston. It was the
I
only,
know.
The
we
only
never
legitimate.
Ran into each other no. back then, but
I think you were a little bit ahead of me at the time. I think I was a generation
probably
after.
On my way out too.
Yeah.
When I was starting to train with Joe Lake, mm-hmm. I started training with Joe Lake when I was teaching in Revere. I was teaching at Nautilus Plus. Yes.
Dakota's family owned that joint.
Yeah. So I was
bunch
teaching
of gangsters.
Teaching Taekwondo there.
That's
and,
right.
And Joe Lake was lifting weights over there. And Joe Lake came in. He saw we had heavy bags and the whole setup. And then he started talking to me and asking me questions. And we made a deal where he would teach me how to box and I would teach him how to kick. And so he came over. And we started doing some, you know, some mitt work and doing some things. And then I started working with him and Dana Rosenblatt.
That's right.
And yeah. Dana was only – he was in high school at the time.
Yeah. I went to Malden Catholic with him.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah.
I think I was 20 and I think Dana was 18.
Yeah.
17, 18, something like
he
that.
He began his career as a kickboxer. That's
mm-hmm.
right. He began his career
yeah.
as a kickboxer and there was no money in it. And he was doing well with his hands. So Joe
Lake
convinced
Lake him to stop kickboxing and he convinced me to stop fighting. From sparring with each other.
And he went on to sell real estate. I
yeah.
think he does that now. He's like
well,
successful.
He
real
had a really successful boxing career,
mm-hmm.
too. He
mm-hmm.
stopped Terry Norris.
That's right.
He who's the guy who used to be the boxing coach? Howard Davis Jr.
Mm-hmm.
He stopped him. Remember him? He
yep.
was the boxing coach at ATT.
Yep. I know exactly what you're talking about.
He beat some good guys. He beat some real good fighters.
He was a southpaw, too, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. He's a tough kid. But he also came up. You know, one of the things that I've said about one of the things that I learned from my kickboxing training was how dangerous it is to meathead spar.
Mm.
And all we did was
so
meathead
oh,
spar.
Oh, back then, that's we. I mean, it started off with, like, you know, me and my brother with, like, you know, hockey helmets and hockey gloves and trying that out. And then little by little, it was like, all right, well, you know, get into a gym and start boxing. And
yeah,
man, I remember the first time I went to a boxing gym in, like, the Boston area, man, it was on. Ooh. Back then, you went to a boxing gym, man. I remember literally, like, my coach setting me up for sparring at, like, a boxing club. He's like, all right, you realize, like, you're the new guy. I was like, yeah.
He's what,
like,
does that mean?
Like, yeah, like, they all know each other. They don't know you. Like, yeah. You got a big target on your back. And I remember, like, the night before, like, I would go spar, it, like, felt like a fight. I was like, yeah, dude, I'm in a fight. And I'd get to the gym, and it was on, dude. Back then, it was, like, it was extremely unintelligent, you know, but we were cavemen at the time. That's all we knew. I remember, you know, there were holes in the walls at, like, Rich Vasopoli's gym from people getting knocked back, and the sheetrock was, like, banged up. Remember that?
The sheetrock, yeah.
Crazy, man. We didn't know any better, though, at the time. You know?
Well, I knew Rich Vasopoli from Dana. Mm-hmm. I became friends with Dana. We started training together, and then we would sometimes train over at Rich's place, and that was when I got introduced into Muay Thai, because one of Dana's friends had gone to Thailand, and he had done some training over there and come back, and that's when I realized, like, how effective leg kicks were.
Yeah.
Like, I'd never been leg kicked before, except by accident.
Yeah.
And then once I realized, like, shins to thigh, like, how much damage that does, and how there was two revelations that happened to me. One was how easy it was for me to get punched in the face. And that was when I first
coming from
boxing.
A traditional martial arts background. Fucking Taekwondo. Yeah.
Taekwondo was so delusional.
Yeah.
Because
I started off in Taekwondo as well, too.
You couldn't punch to the face. Nope. So you had a very distorted perception of what you could get away with in a fight where there was no rules. You just had this real... And so
I had the same reality check.
Yeah. So boxing alone was not good. Kickboxing was better because I could create some distance. But it was still way easier than I liked to get punched in the face. Mm-hmm. But then Muay Thai was a big one. Because the moment you take that first leg kick and you feel the thud, and you're like, oh, shit. This is that easy? It's that easy to diminish me.
Oh.
Like, almost instantaneously, you're diminished.
I feel it as you're talking about it. I took a low kick from Peter Ertz in Thailand.
Oh, no!
And oddly enough, another trip was, who was it?
He's
Pedro
so
Hizo.
Big.
Oh, dude.
Oh, no.
Bro.
He might be the worst.
I'm telling you, I thought my femur fucking cracked in half. Never felt pain like that
from
before.
From Peter or from Pedro?
Both at different times.
Pedro's the scariest guy I've ever seen kick a bag.
Oh.
I've never seen anybody kick a bag so hard.
I agree, man. I trained with him a little bit in Thailand back in the day. Oh. We used to train at a gym called ISS, which was like a takeoff of, like, Sitya Tong. Like, we sold some fighters and some trainers to a friend of Korea Tong's. And we would train on the roof of this building on, like, Sukhumvit Highway in, like, the sun with, like, a canopy, like, above us. It was pretty rough. But Peter Ertz was there training at the time, and Pedro Hizo came through there. And I mean, I was a lot smaller than them, obviously, but dude,
why'd you spar with them? They're heavyweights.
Because I'm retarded, dude. Fucking stupid. Because it was the opportunity, man. They're like, right. Oh, we need guys. No, I was actually helping someone else, another one of my stable mates, get ready. And he just happened to be there. And he's like, oh, man, let's move around a little bit. And I was like, this is probably not a good idea. But it's an honor. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm partially proud of getting kicked in the leg by those guys. But I probably shouldn't have done that. You know?
Dude,
what's worse, though, nowadays that you see is the calf kicks.
Mm-hmm.
More damage from those, man.
Yeah,
I'm telling you.
There's no meat down there.
Dude, I'll take the kicks all day long on the thigh now, man. That tender area. Like, I remember losing a fight in Thailand. I didn't really have an extensive career as a fighter, but I did have some quality fights, and that were valuable lessons to me. And I remember I was blocking wrong. You know, the whole thing, every time he low kicked, I would block and I would take it right where the calf kick goes, like on the low part of the shin.
Mm.
And I was pointing my toes down. It's always controversy of toes down, toes up. I always teach toes up to flex the shin muscle, to flex the muscle around the shin bone. And I was blocking wrong. And I'll never forget that, man. I was bedridden from blocking kicks the wrong way. And it was that same area where there's, like you said, there's no
meat. How long were you bedridden for?
2 weeks, probably. I remember, like, trying to go to, like, it was in Thailand. I came back from Thailand. Dude, it was a rough flight. Like, ugh, it was awesome. Great. Lots of pain medication for that flight. But I remember literally, like, after some of the fights, like, that I've had, you know, I was literally bedridden. Like, couldn't go to, like, family barbecues and shit. Like, just like, dude, I can't get up. I can't
walk. Well, it's
one
of those kicks in the UFC that we've seen emerge over the last few years. Mm-hmm. And I always give credit to Benson Henderson.
Absolutely.
For being the first guy to start doing it.
It's funny you say that, because I threw a layup to Anik, like, the last show. And I was like, but maybe we might. And Anik's like, yeah, I'm not mentioning that name. Like,
Benson Henderson? You wouldn't mention Benson?
No, I mean, you know, for...
Because he's over in Bellator.
Correct.
Now?
I mean, it is what it is, you know?
That's crazy. That's so crazy.
J.A.
You got to give it up to Benson.
Dude, I said it. I said, man, you know, just a quick tip, like a little fun fact. You know, Benson Henderson's the guy that really kicked that off, you know, for lack of a better term. And he's like, yep, copy that. I was like, he's like, yeah, I'm not going to mention that name. I was like, all right, cool, respect.
I get it. You got to do what you got to do to stay alive,
man,
in this world.
He was exactly. We got to eat, you know.
He was the first, though. But
yeah, he
didn't have the same effectiveness for whatever reason that these guys do now.
Yeah.
There's guys now that are doing it where you see like one kick in, the guy's fucked.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's such a lower risk for the takedown, too, because you just, you're not traveling that far. You know, the higher you kick, the more risk for the takedown.
It just seems awful. You know, like the legs just immediately stop working right.
Yeah, I've had a few of my athletes suffer some serious trauma from those kicks and fights, man. It's not.
And you can't really prep for those.
You really can't. Like, it's just all about managing distance, you know, controlling the range, because you can't really check it. It's too low to check.
And you can't condition it.
No, not at all. There's nothing to really do with it other than just, like I said, you got to manage distance properly. So you just either weigh in or weigh out. But in that middle, where, like, you get kicked like that, man, ouchie.
What are your thoughts on this Robert Whittaker kick? I mean, I call it the Robert Whittaker kick because Yoel Romero fucked him up with it in their first fight, that side kick to the knee.
Oh, I'll refer to it as the John Jones, really.
John Jones,
one of the first
Winkle
ones.
John,
he was at. It's actually illegal in some commissions, right? Is it legal? I think it's illegal.
I don't know.
Illegal in some commissions don't allow it because of the danger of like attacking the joint.
I have a hard time accepting that because it's okay to attack your fucking face. Why is it okay for me to kick you in the face, but it's not okay for me to kick you in the knee? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, they say that, you know, and even in Thai boxing, too, you're not supposed to deliberately attack the joint.
Yeah,
you know?
Look, John is John's a master at it.
Yeah, it's actually in Jeet Kune Do and the Art and Philosophy of Bruce Lee, I believe they call it like it's a kung fu kick. It's called a dumb tech, I believe.
The way Winkle John started teaching it and, you know, way his students started doing it was the oblique style.
Yes.
But then they started doing that sidekick style too. Like that oblique style is very interesting.
Yeah.
Why is my face in there? It's, I think that, in my opinion, it's a super, super effective technique. And to take it out doesn't make any sense to me if you still allow heel hooks and you still allow – I mean, especially since you allow kicks to the fucking head.
Yeah, true. And I'm a fan of the kick. You know, I'm not against it. I appreciate it. One of the things I tell fighters all the time is that if you're going to do anything, if you're going to kick me, if you're going to punch me, if you're going to try to take me down, anything, the first thing you need to do is take that step with that lead leg. So if you – and this is something Bruce Lee talked about in his Art and Philosophy, but it's always disrupting that lead leg, stopping that lead leg. And the Thais use it all the time. A lot of times, you know, that teep, the front kick, they teep the leg a lot. It's not always taught. Like a lot of people overlook it, but I'm a huge fan of attacking that front leg, like teeping the front leg or side kicking the front leg. So the first thing they need to do to close distance is take that step.
Well, anything also to create another variable that the fighter has to think about as they're moving in. You know,
correct.
Anything that stops them. Like the worst thing you could ever do with a fighter is give them something that's real clear and easy to plan for.
Yeah.
You do the same technique over and over again. He can time it. You know, the same predictable series of movements. He can time it. That's why a guy like Dominic Cruz is so difficult to deal with, because Dominic, like, good luck predicting
that. I was just
going
to say
he
that.
He starts shuffling
he's
his feet,
lefty,
moves
righty.
His head, he's swinging from the hips, and
dude,
he's
that's actually
coming
a good impression.
At you with it. Oh, he's
that's
so
good,
awkward.
Man. That he is,
know?
Man. But he makes it work for him.
Fuck
you know?
Yeah, he does.
And the key thing with him, too, is that and that it's difficult to do that oblique kick or that front stop kick is the lateral movement. Man. If you're going straight in all the time and you're walking straight into that, you're going to be susceptible. Dominic's always stepping off to the side.
Yeah.
Whether he's a lefty or a righty, he's always creating an angle, which is huge in combat.
You know who does that oblique kick fucking better than anybody? Lorenz Larkin.
Yes.
Lorenz Larkin throws that shit to the body like a sidekick
so
and sends dudes flying.
Yep.
Remember when he fought Neil Magny?
Yes, I do.
I was like, what?
Dude, he's a stud, that guy.
Fuck,
man. He's
is.
Clean. I watched him warm up. I think he fought in the Boston show. I think at the time I was training.
Yeah, look at this. Yeah, look how he throws that shit to the body.
Dude, he's a stud, man. I don't know why he wasn't as successful as he could have been or should have been.
Well, here's what happened. He went over to Bellator and he immediately fought Lima.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Lima's a fucking monster.
Yeah.
He loses a decision to Lima. Then he gets into a slugfest with Paul motherfucking Daly, who might have the best left hook the world's ever known.
Danger.
For MMA.
Yes.
I mean, you don't want to take
he's
away
a beast.
Boxers.
Beast.
But But that fucking left hook he's got is just insane.
Dude, I met him back in the day. We used to first time I went over to London, we did a show called Cage Rage. And I took Jorge Rivera
great
over there.
Great fights over Cage Rage.
Yeah, man, it was awesome. And Paul Daly, Michael Bisping, Anderson Silva.
We played that the other day.
Did you really?
Because Jorge was just teeing off on him from the clinch. Bro, and Anderson was just taking him on the chin.
Want to hear a funny story?
Yeah.
I see Anderson, and all I can see is like, George has got his back to me. Jorge's got his back to me. So they're pummeling, and they're in the center of the cage, and they're kind of in a tie clinch. And George is throwing vicious uppercuts and overhands and uppercuts to dirty boxing.
He was a knockout striker, man.
He had thunder in his hands, and he's throwing like these big bombs over the top, everything. And all I can see, because George's back's to me, I can't see Anderson's face. All I can see is his head bobbling, you know, taking the hits. I'm like, yeah, yeah, go, go, go. And then over George's shoulder, I see Anderson's face, and he's laughing at George. I'm like, fuck. And then he just blitzed
him. How did he do that? Did he roll with them slightly? Like, what did he do?
Dude, I think it's all a matter of, like, you know, using your shoulders to protect impact, you know, shrugging, so to say. The first thing is bite. The first line of defense, bite down. Second line of defense, brace your neck, you know, and he just... Yeah. Dude, I mean, he's got a fucking pumpkin head. He's got a big dome, dude.
Well, I mean, but you stop and think about later in his career, he couldn't take those kind of shots.
Yeah, they add up after a while, I guess. Yeah. But back in the day, man, I remember coming into that. You know, I had followed Muay Thai. I'd followed Shoot Box. I'd follow, you know, Pele, those guys. So I knew Anderson Silva. A lot of people like, oh, is this guy Anderson Silva? He's coming over. A lot of people didn't know him. So I knew what we were getting into. I knew what type of fight it was. But the funny thing is, when he came to the UFC, remember, he debuted, I was there at the Hard Rock, joint against Chris Leben. And everybody's like, oh, dude, the bets, like, I was like, I saw the odds at, like, the Mandalay, and I was like, dude, I'm all over this.
What were the bets? What was the
odds?
It was
just something crazy. I forget at the time, but, like, it was, they had Leben, like being, like, the favorite. I was like, dude, nobody knows him.
Oh, my God.
Like, it's like,
I knew him.
Yeah, I knew him too, man.
I remember during the promo, one of the things I said is, you got to be ready for this guy. Yeah. This is a different animal you're experiencing.
Same with Rich Franklin, man. Rich is my boy. Love you, Rich. But, you know, I bet the fucking house on that, and I did really well, because the odds were just, everybody thought Rich was just going to steamroll him, you know.
Well, Anderson, particularly because Rich was a stand-up fighter.
Right.
Primarily. I mean, he had a ground game.
And he was on top at the time. I mean, he was way on top. But Anderson was just on a whole different level coming into to mixed martial arts, coming into the UFC. He was just on a whole different level.
Especially the style that Chris Leben had. His style was so perfectly tailored for Anderson's style.
Walk forward, throw bombs. Anderson's like a smooth, retreating, defensive fighter.
These came from Thailand.
Pretty cool.
I had them shipped over. Pretty dope, right?
Yeah, they are. Regardless. Chinese, I believe. But
are they?
Yeah, they're not Thai, I think. They're more of a Chinese. You're like, damn it.
They got me. They got me over there. They just look dope.
More of a Chinese influence. No, they are dope, man. Mm. Thailand was sick, huh?
Loved it, man.
Yeah, man.
I love it. Cage Rage was an interesting place because there was that was a wild west of fights.
Yeah.
Remember when Lee Murray fought Anderson Silva?
Yep. I do. You know,
they almost got into a brawl at the weigh-ins.
Dude, Lee Murray, apparently, like, when I started going over there, they were like, oh, Lee Murray. I was like, yeah, everybody's a gangster. Everybody's a fucking gangster.
No.
This motherfucker is real gangster. Like,
he
used to deliver, like, ticket sales, like, money from ticket sales, and, like, a black, like, leather, like, duffel bag just stacked with fucking pounds.
Yeah.
I was just like, who is this guy? And the promoters, Dave and Andy, I think at the time, were like, no, mate, he's a legit gangster. And I was like, whoa.
Do you remember when he got stabbed in the heart in a knife fight and then was training 6 weeks later?
I do. I do remember that. I don't recall details, but I do remember something to that effect.
London Shoe Fighters, our good buddy Marius, was training at 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu. He came to L.A. to learn Jiu-Jitsu, and he was one of the head guys over at London Shoe Fighter. Mm-hmm. So I got to get in with those guys.
Yep, I'm familiar with the camp. Yep.
Before all that shit was going on. And he was telling me about Lee Murray, like, way early, like back in 2000.
Yeah.
You know, so it was way early, way back in the early days.
It's so funny, too, because somebody brought it to my attention. Like, dude, did you see Lee Murray's fucking palace in Morocco? Like, he took the money and ran, bro. He made it.
Poster, dude, of Jorge.
Listen, it's a mural. It's like a 30 by 30 foot fucking mural. Something like on his wall. And he's putting the armbar on George Rivera.
Yeah.
And on the back of George's shorts, there's a big sityourtongue.com. I'm like, fuck. The only time I didn't want the plug. Like,
well, he caught him in a triangle, right?
Was it a triangle? Yeah, triangle or armbar. That came, you know, That came on that was unexpected, you know, but you know, it was tough, man. You know, George was a very emotional fighter. You know, he had a rough upbringing with his family. You know, he's very connected to his family, and you know, it was a roller coaster working with that dude, man. But he was my first, man. You never forget your first, right?
Yeah.
He was a great dude, man.
He had talent. That's for sure. He sure did, man. He had real power.
He did well, man. If you go back and look, like, he fought like the who's who's of like the UFC, like that. Everybody he fought was legit. There was never a dull moment of any fights that George had, you know.
Yeah,
he had a good run for a while there.
It was the early days too.
Dude, I remember we were in when we first started doing shows. Yeah, that's funny. There's another picture too.
It's a weird mural too, because it's got like go large on that again.
Yeah, there's another one too.
The proportions are off.
Yeah.
So whoever did it was kind of
horrible artist.
Kind of a shit artist.
He might have actually done that himself.
But I love
he might have actually fucking had someone come in and put some numbers up and fucking paint by numbers.
The old UFC logo. He's got the Mandalay Bay logo.
That is hilarious.
See, it's got him getting him in the triangle. But look at like at the one when he's flexing. Like, that's not even the same dude. Like, that's look, they hilarious. Added all this extra meat to his lats and his lower tricep area.
I've seen another one, too. He might have a few in his fucking house of him, murals of himself. Looking.
That's so ridiculous. What is the one mirror? Why one image of the two of them clinching? Like, what? Yeah. Look at that. How bizarre. Like, why put that picture in?
His quads are yoked up, though.
Moroccan dude. Yeah. Like, look, I'm a big fan of clinch. We put the clinch in. I want the Mandalay Bay scale.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I make your arms bigger. And then when you get him in the triangle, I make you tan. It's like he's got different skin.
I know.
Skin
he's not,
tone.
I was just going to say, he's not even the same tan.
He's a different guy.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Is that his place? So he's still in the pokey. For people who don't know, Lee Murray was a part of one of the biggest armed robberies, I think the biggest in the history of the UK.
Yeah, huge money they made away with.
Millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And some of it's still missing.
Millions of pounds, I think. And do the trend, you know.
There he is.
There you go.
He would go out with a fucking mask on like Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, I remember fighting. I remember that walk.
53 million pounds.
Imagine that. Pounds, 53. What's the conversion on that, Jamie? That's ridiculous money.
Million.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. Like, at the time, we would have to go back in figure out what it was. But a fuckload.
That's a lot of money. Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is still missing. But yeah, they had like ninja masks on. They were dressed like they were in that movie Heat.
How did they? I thought there was no extradition like from Morocco. That's why he fled. They ended up extraditing him though.
I don't know what happened.
Huh.
But yeah, I thought that too. Wasn't that where Badr Hari went to?
Yeah.
Badr Hari was like, fuck this. I'm going to Morocco, son.
Come catch me now.
But they always want to wind up leaving. So they you know, Badr Hari, he did his time. He went over, came back, and Badr Hari got arrested for stomping a man's shin in half.
Ooh.
Yeah. There was some sort of a dispute in a nightclub, and Badr Hari does not play. Huh. There's a video of him walking into a hotel, and the hotel guy says something stupid to him, so he goes behind the counter and smacks him in the face. Imagine that guy.
It's my hotel.
He's a fucking giant, too. There he's like 6'5", world heavyweight kickboxing champion, and a ferocious, terrifying man who fucks up grown-ass people. Yeah, here's the video.
Right,
yeah, I don't know what the guy said, but Badr Hari was like, what? Excuse me? What the fuck did you just say? It just goes
behind
the counter.
He probably said some shit like, welcome to the Marriott.
Yeah. We're going to have to see a credit card. It's like, no, this is going to be. Look, he gets right behind the counter.
Look at this fuck. He smacks him in the back of the head.
Yeah. And the way he did it, it's like super dangerous.
Super scary looking, too. He like stalks him, walks him down, staring
at
him.
And he smacked him very dismissively. He wasn't like worried about the counter.
Exactly. He like smacked him like a little kid in the back of the head.
He hit him
like,
with the tips of his fingers. He was just like, hey, what the fuck are you talking to? Occasionally, you know,
you got to pick and choose your battles wisely, man. If I saw Badr Hari walking towards me and like,
hello, sir.
Yeah. How can I help you?
Yeah. What may I do for you? Credit card. That's not necessary.
That's ridiculous. Your suite is ready.
You're
can I get your bags?
Yeah. Champagne will be brought up to the room. Oh, he's Muslim. He probably doesn't drink, right?
No, probably not. I don't know.
He's a beast, man. And
his coffee's good.
He's supposed to be on his way back, right? He fought Rico Verhoeven, and he broke his arm in like some freak incident in the first round.
He's breaking shin bones, breaking arms.
I think he broke his arm. Like, he fought Rico, and I think he was blocking a kick, and his arm just broke.
Yikes.
And he realized it somewhere in the middle of the round. He's like, we got to stop. Mm. Like, he's just like, this is broken.
Who just broke their arm recently during a fight? Was it what's it, Paul Felder.
Yeah, Felder did with the spinning back fist. I saw it coming, man.
Yeah.
That fucking spinning back fist.
You always read the spin kicks. Like, no matter how many angles I have in that fucking truck, no matter what I'm looking at, as much experience as you know, I have, like, you read the spin shit. Like, you see it coming a mile away. Is it just because you have so much experience, like, with the spin
kicks?
That
was my shit.
Dude, that was your shit. But you see it, like, a lot of times you're like, he's setting up that spin. He's setting up the spin.
Well, guys load up their hips. Yeah. You know, I mean, that was my number one technique from when I was fighting, was spinning back kick to the body.
Yeah.
I just knew that it was such a short amount of time that I needed to deliver it. Yeah. And if you were in range and I hit you, you're Fucksville. Dude. So I knew there was just like this...
We've laughed about this before, because I tell you, like, I've never held for a kick as hard as yours. And I was like, ah, come on, dude. Don't honey dick me. You bullshit me. Bro, it's not fun holding pads for you. There's times, like, where you're texting me and I'm just like, fuck, don't return the text. don't go to Syndicate, or don't go to Performance Institute and hold pads for Joe. Dude, I remember one time I held pads for you. And I remember literally, like, I couldn't grip a coffee mug to, like, drink. My forearms were so trash. I remember that night pushing talkback buttons on the truck, at the truck. And I was, like, fatigued. Just my fingers wouldn't function. Bro, I'm telling you, no bullshit. I've held for a lot of guys. I've held for a lot of fighters, a lot of big guys, small guys. I've never held. Even that's a round kick. That's not even some spin shit that you do. Like, just the basic Thai round kick. Bro, nasty. Nasty, nasty. You did it on that machine too, didn't you? What were the numbers on it? Something silly, like.
Well, there's a guy who's figured out how to beat my number. A guy at the Performance Institute. I got 152,000, and the dude got 188,000. And what he realizes, if you hit it with the instep, the number's larger than if you hit it with the shin. I got to hit it with the instep. Yeah. But I'm healing a slight meniscus tear that I got when I was doing it with Joe Schilling with no warm-up, wearing jeans.
That like was
a
fucking brilliant.
Asshole at 50 years old. Full blast kick, no warm-up.
That dick measuring testosterone. Like, what? You want to kick, dude?
We were hanging out, and we're having a good time, and Joe Schilling's here, and he's kicking that thing. And,
game on.
Yeah, and he got some pretty good numbers. You know, he was smashing it, so he's all right.
He's a mean dude. I love that dude.
I love that
He's a sweetheart, though, man. You know, he's such a cool guy, dude. Yeah. But he's fucking terrifying.
Well, I was talking to someone about him, and they were saying that he's, like, one of the most risk-taking elite fighters you'll ever see.
Yeah.
Like, he's a real elite kickboxer, but he's been knocked out before and stopped before just because he's so he's not risk averse.
Yeah.
He'll take big risks.
Yep.
But it's one of the reasons why he's so fucking exciting.
Yep, exactly. I was just gonna say the same thing. That's what the fans want to see, man. Yeah, they don't want to see conservatives, you know, trying to
he's a fan favorite for sure. You can't stop crazy. Like that whole way of looking at things and
so
his whole motto.
That's why I like the bonuses with the UFC and all that, you know, Dana putting that together. You know, I remember back in the day, like, one of the early fighter meetings, or, like, you know, we'd do the weigh-ins and then Dana would be like, "All right, fighters only backstage." You know, they do fighters only. Right. No coaches, no corners, and Dana's like, "Yeah, you know, game plan, you know, strategy, fuck all that, just go for it. Like, you want to get paid, go." And one of the examples he would use is Chris Lytle. Remember Chris Lytle? Like, he had, like, a losing record in the UFC, but he was just went for it every time and would bonus all the time, you know. So
I wouldn't give that speech. I'd give a very different speech.
What would your speech consist of?
Fight your best fight. Yeah. Fight the way you're supposed to fight.
That was the message, but the idea was don't you know, leave it out there. Don't be conservative.
You can leave it out there if you want. Yeah. Your opponent might not. You know, this is the thing. Fighting is very important to me. It means a lot. It means a lot because I used to do it. It means a lot because I love to watch it. It means a lot because I'm very deeply entrenched in the history and the significance of it, what it means. And for me, fighting should always be done at its best. And what that means is you should always do what's the right thing to do in the situation. Like, if you're, you know, you could break it down with individual arts, right? If you're doing jiu-jitsu, there's a correct way to do an armbar counter, right? Don't do the incorrect way because the fans want to see
it.
Yeah. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, exactly.
If there's an exciting way to get out of an armbar, that's not the right way to do it. But
not
the fans
pick
like
up
it.
And slam them.
But it might. Well, the pick them up and slam them works if you have to. But I'm saying, like, just as a rough example, if there was a way to defend an arm bar that wasn't the correct way to do it, but the fans liked it more, don't ridiculous. Do that.
Exactly.
Don't do that. You want to fight like a maestro.
Right.
You want to fight like a virtuoso.
Yeah.
You want to fight like Mighty Mouse.
There you go. Exactly.
That's what I tell everybody. You look at Mighty Mouse has had moments in his career, like the Ian McCall fight is a good example, where he also had a full-time job. Wasn't dedicated the way he should be, and got into a brawl, and Ian took his back, wound up pounding him, and Mighty Mouse had vertigo after that fight. He was really fucked up, and then quit his job, realized, like, I have to go full-time. I have to dedicate myself to this full-time, you know? And when he did that, then under the tutelage of Matt Hume, he became the Mighty Mouse we see now. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, one of the things that sets him apart from everybody else is that he's not running away from you and not getting hit. He's running at you and not getting hit.
True.
I mean, he's coming straight forward and then cutting angles and doing things to you that you didn't anticipate, and he's not there for the counters.
Yeah.
So he's fighting correctly.
Yeah. Seamless, too.
Yeah, and it's incredibly exciting. Yeah, it and that is. Was one of the criticisms of him really early on in his reign, was that he wasn't finishing guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then he knocked out Joseph Benavidez, and then he started finishing guys in the final seconds of the round.
Right.
You know, I mean, he's just a monster, man.
He is, man.
He's
he
a
is.
Fucking monster. But he fights correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, no disrespect to Chris Lytle, who I love. Mm-hmm. He's a great fighter. Mm-hmm. I was just watching his fight against Brian Foster. He was so skilled. Like, people forgot how good Chris Lytle was. He won that fight with a leg lock. You know, and he's known as a brawler, and people forget. He fucking spun around, got that leg, and snatched it out and extended it and really fucked Brian's leg up.
Yeah, crafty veteran.
He was a crafty guy, but brawled a lot.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan of I'm a fan of watching brawls when they take place.
I'm not a fan as well either. You know what I mean? I'm more of a fan of and I train a lot of my guys like almost defensively, like backing up, like retreat fighting, you know, constantly trying to jockey for position. I call it like right place, right time all the time in that line of fire, you know, where we're jockeying for that position, you know, and it's a lot of times it's easier just to take a step back. If we're fighting each other, we're standing in front of each other, I take a step back. What do you naturally do? You walk to me.
Right.
So it's the timing of catching them on the way in. And guys like, you know, great fighters, in my opinion, are more like defensive fighters. Like you said earlier about Chris Lieben coming in with Anderson Silva, Forrest Griffin.
Sure.
Trying to attack. Like, you're more vulnerable, like recklessly, like you said, like brawling recklessly coming in against somebody skilled as Anderson Silva or Demetrius Johnson, you know. So I'm a fan of the retreating attack, I call it.
Anderson was such a retreating attacker that he had a problem when guys didn't come forward.
Right, exactly.
Like the stinkers that he had, like, man,
Talis Latis, so painful to watch those fights.
Patrick Cote was very smart when he fought him. Yeah, Patrick took very little damage in that fight.
I camped him that whole fight. I trained him that whole fight. I had the experience from Jorge. I knew Anderson Silva. You know, he spent that entire camp in Boston with me. He did have a knee injury going into the fight. We knew, like, it was going to be an issue. But, you know, I actually said this to him, part of the game plan and strategy. It's funny you say that, was to let him come to you. Like, everybody, because Patrick was the type of fighter that was a go-getter. He had that big overhand right.
Right.
You know, he would put iron chin. Yeah, he would put pressure on you. And I said, Patrick, I'm telling you, you can't fight the way you normally fight against Anderson Silva. Even if you hear boos, we're following the game plan. You know, if you hear the boos from the crowd, like, we're doing the right thing. Don't fall victim to it. Don't try to lunge at him. Don't throw big power punches. Let him come to you. And we did. And that was actually the first time we took Anderson past a third round. I think it was either third or the fourth. We were actually going into the fourth, I think.
And he was stepping in to throw a kick and his leg blew out.
Exactly. Yep. That was in Chicago. I cornered
him. Did he get an MRI before that fight?
I think, if I remember correctly, he had an issue. We knew going into it. We didn't want to pull out of the fight. You know,
how bad was the issue?
It was pretty severe. And after it, I think that was just the icing of the cake. It blew out completely during the fight.
So he had a partial tear of his ACL?
Something like that. Something to that effect. Bring up that fight, Jamie. I'm curious now to see.
Yeah. It was weird. It was a weird blowout because like there was like a lot of distance between
I was just going to say, there was like, it wasn't during an exchange. I think, like you said, he went to push off his back foot. I don't know. I'd be curious to see it. It's been a while since I visited that.
Yeah. I just remember not knowing what happened and he fell down.
Yeah. You called that fight, obviously, right?
Yeah.
That was before.
What's that?
Patrick Cote, Anderson Silva.
From probably 2000, what was that, 9?
Maybe a little later, maybe 9 or 10, yeah. Dude, it's a blur at this point.
I know.
It's a blur, dude. I've done like 400 shows.
Was it?
2008.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, see, that was a while ago, yeah. Wow, man.
That was The Rain. That was when Anderson, he was the king, but people didn't appreciate him the way they appreciated him after he knocked out Forrest Griffin, yeah. Stephen Bonner, after yeah. Vitor Belfort, that front kick to the face.
Yeah.
That's when he became the GOAT.
Dude, he was like literally feared. Like, I think a lot of fighters are just like, that call came and it was like Anderson Silva, like, fuck.
Well, he was also so calm.
Yeah.
You know, there was something about him in those days. He was so calm.
Dude, I used
to
always say this, and I told Jorge this at his cage rage fight with him. I said, dude, he beats people at the weigh-ins. He's like, what do you mean? Eric was like, what do you mean? He has this thing. It's funny. Like, when he goes to weigh in with you, like, you know, normally, like, people go, like, face-to-face. They get real close. Like, he would walk up to you as if you're going to – and then he would thrust his neck forward. Like, his head would, like, fucking gadget head, like, would come out, and he would just be all up in your face, and it would, like, surprise you. Like, you know, and I told Jorge that. I said, Jorge, be ready at the weigh-in. Like, he's going to put his face, like, he's going to cover distance quickly. Like, he moves his head like fucking Shanae. Like, he's like, oh, no, you didn't. And he puts his head, like, way out, and he did it. And I was like, oh, man, there it is.
Well, that was one of the ways that Chris Lieben overcame him psychologically at the weigh-ins. I remember Chris saying, I'm not afraid of you.
Yeah.
He was looking right at him, and he said, I'm not afraid of you.
And he probably wasn't, man.
He wasn't afraid of him.
Nope.
That was Chris when he was in his prime, and that's when they were kissing at the weigh-in. When Anderson
that's
got
right.
so close to
that's
his
right.
face, they were literally lip to lip.
Yeah.
And Chris
somebody
didn't
just,
budge.
Somebody just spoke of something about him fighting in that bare knuckle league or something against Phil Baroni or something like that. I heard.
Who?
Chris Lieben versus Phil Baroni. This could
Chris
be just
Lieben.
Fucking, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. I said Chris Weidman.
Oh, Weidman.
Weidman. I did say Weidman, right?
No. Lieben, I thought.
Did I say Weidman? What I said? Weidman. I've combined
Weed
the two
man.
Of them. Did I say Weidman Lieben. Or Lieben? Lieben. Okay, I might have fucked up. Chris Weidman.
Yeah.
When Weidman beat him.
Oh, he beat him at the weigh-in.
They got face to face.
Yeah. And he said, I'm
not afraid of you.
Yeah.
And when he was looking at right out, he goes, I'm not afraid of you, bro.
Yeah.
And then you could tell Anderson's like, oh, shit, he's not afraid of
you. Yeah. That, and see what happened that night. He got tagged, man.
Well, what's interesting in that fight, too, was that Anderson could – I mean, he was clearly scoring with heavy leg kicks and putting Lieben in jeopardy. I mean, he was damaging
Weidman.
That leg. Say Lieben? I said it again.
You said it again.
What's wrong with me? Why am I confusing those two?
They're both Chris. Fuck it.
It's talk
Chris.
About him.
I should just say Chris.
Yeah, just say Chris. Bro.
Chris. When Weidman got him down the first round, almost got him in a leg lock.
Yeah.
And then they got back up to the feet, and Anderson started fucking him up with leg kicks.
Mm-hmm.
And Anderson was hitting him with some nasty, nasty leg kicks.
Yep.
And he was saying in between rounds, like, come on, stand up with me.
Yeah.
Come on, stand up with me. It was weird. Mm-hmm. It was weird that he was doing that. Like, it was totally out of character.
Yeah.
He's like, no, we're not going to go do it now. Come on, stand up.
He had some funky moments in the octagon.
Yeah.
I remember he'd done the fucking Ong Bak, moving his hands all funky.
Yeah.
And like
against Vitor before he
breakdancing
him.
And shit. Like, I remember there was a couple fights.
Well, the fight with Damian Maia was
just, that's the one I'm referring to. Yeah.
He psychologically fell apart in that fight.
Yeah.
He was screaming at Damian Maia and yelling things at him.
Yeah.
And Damian Maia is just still plugging away.
Yeah.
He took a lot of shots in that fight, but then was there third, fourth, and fifth when Anderson wasn't doing shit.
Yeah.
Anderson was just like moving
away
from him.
Was that the fight? There was one fight too where he was like in the center of the octagon controlling, beating up, striking, and like I forget who it was. It might have been the Damian Maia. It might have been somebody else. But he actually stopped and stepped back and put his back to the fence. And say, come on, let's fight on the fence now. And he like backed himself up.
That was Stephen Bonner.
That's right. And that's when he got caught with the spinning elbow, was it?
Stephen Bonner tried to spinning back kick him, and he just slid out of the way and then went right back to the fence and went, come on.
Yeah,
on back
that's
here.
What it was, exactly.
And then he fucked him up.
Yeah.
I think he hit him with a knee to the body and then dropped him and then beat the shit out of him. Yeah, that was just, he was just so calm and relaxed in there, and Bonner was so stiff and tight. And I think
that was Bonner's
in Brazil,
style, too. Was it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I worked with Stefan for a bunch of fights. I didn't work with him for that fight. I don't recall. But.
That was also a fight where I think Bonner pissed hot. I think he had an opportunity.
Did he?
Yeah, I think he's just like, listen, I got some injuries, but I'm just going to juice it up.
Dude, pissed hot is better than shit hot, because when he fought Sam Hogar at the Thomas Mack Arena, he fucking shit himself during the fight. And Sam Hogar was like, bro, he's like on top and they're grappling. He's like, bro, you fucking stink, you shit yourself. And he's like, yes, I did. And the worst part about it is we come backstage, you know, the Thai cups, they like the string up, the butt crack.
Yeah.
He's like, coach, get my cup. And I was like, bro, you're on your own, homie.
No.
I handed him a scissors. I was like, cut it off, dude. I'm good. It's hilarious, dude. I got to corner him, I think, for that fight with the great Carlson Gracie at the time when
that's
he was alive.
That's happened several times.
Dude, what was one of the fights?
Shit themselves.
Dude,
Tim
I'm telling
Sylvia
you.
Sylvia shit himself once, hardcore.
Oh, and then when we went to the Reebok uniforms and dudes were wearing white, I was like, bro, bad idea. Let's not go. No white shorts. Like, yeah, stay away from white shorts.
Dark
like,
brown.
I think Yoel, dude. Yoel Romero, didn't
did
he?
Shoot?
Yeah, I think he sharted one of his fights, too.
One time, Michael Chiesa, when he fought Beneil Dariush, right before the fight started, he leans over to me and goes, dude, I might shit myself.
I remember that before the walk, dude. Yeah. They almost had to postpone the walk.
Yeah, man. He was going to run to the bathroom.
I remember UFC
before
staff.
The fight started.
Yeah, UFC staff. He was in the tunnel getting ready to walk. He's like, bro, I got to go to the bathroom. They're like, no, you're good. You're good. He's like,
why
no,
didn't
bro.
They just let him go?
Run.
How long could it take?
I don't know.
30
man.
Seconds will cover. Let the guy take a dump.
Right. And
Jesus
then and then
Christ,
we're behind in production
fight.
Time, the format, fucking schedule, whatever it is. But dude, when a
here's
man's
Anderson,
got a shit, he's got a shit.
Here's Anderson and Patrick. Yeah, so yeah. He's just is this on Fight Pass?
Yeah, I
just
yeah.
This is the first round, so it didn't happen till third or fourth or whatever it was.
Yeah,
I think it was I think it was the third round.
But see, just
yeah, but see, yeah.
Anderson was just moving around,
yeah.
Real relaxed, didn't do much. Oh. Yeah. It was an interesting fight because Cote yeah. didn't fight his normal style.
Yep, exactly.
And he stayed real, like, boxed up. Oh, yep. I forgot this, that Anderson had him down at one point in yeah. time.
Anderson's grappling's underrated, too, man. He's a good grappler. He's just long as fuck. He's built to grapple, too.
Well, look at this, even when he was kicking it. Look, he tries
yeah,
to help
so
him up.
He's like, nope.
No.
I think
no.
this is his knee was already, I think we knew at this point, he's like, my knee's jacked up, dude. My knee's jacked up. I remember him talking to me during the fight and in between rounds. But he definitely put up a fight, at least. And at the time, nobody was even close to putting up a fight.
Well,
there
Patrick,
I am right there with my
yeah,
silly hat.
So it's right before then. Patrick was super fucking dangerous.
See, this is where we said we're the first one to take him to the third round because nobody had passed
yeah.
the second round with him.
Well, not only that, it was a totally uneventful three rounds.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
There wasn't
yeah.
even a moment yeah. where Patrick was in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, and he was fighting for the title.
Yep. And, yeah, that was the main event title fight. Yeah.
Patrick was always dangerous. He always had that one bomb that could put you out, and mm-hmm. Anderson knew that. You know,
yeah.
so he was fighting a smart strategy, but it was interesting because it kind of showed a hole in his style.
Mm-hmm.
That his style was so counterattacking.
Yep, yep.
He did not.
There
want,
it is, right there.
Oh, that's
you know
crazy.
What he did? He tried to lift his front foot up, almost like to fake like a front kick. Bring that back, Jamie.
That's
I think he tried to pick up his front leg to fake like a T, but to fake like a front leg attack. And then he hopped on his back leg.
Yeah.
It's rough, man.
Weird.
Yeah. See, right there. There it is right there. Yeah. Yikes. He's in a lot of pain, too. Cote is a tough dude, too, man. To see him wince and go down like that, man.
So
you know
what was
pain.
The issue? Was it a meniscus issue?
I don't
or was
recall.
It a...
I'd be lying if I made some shit up right now, but I think it was something like that meniscus
what
tear.
What a vulnerable joint. That's why leg
he always
locks
had,
scare
you know,
the shit
I,
out
if
of
I
me.
If I recall, dude, I think he had issues too. Like he had a staph infection in his knee, like repeatedly. Like I remember he had staph in his knee like a bunch of times. So I don't know, man. But he, you know, his best punch too was not only his overhand right, but his rear uppercut. Nasty,
yeah.
nasty.
Yeah, he
busted
had big
me
power.
The fuck up a bunch of times.
It was weird his power. You know, I
yeah.
mean. It's not like he didn't look like a strong guy.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
his power was weird.
Yeah. See, watch. He hops up on that front leg and. Oh,
you see it just right give there. Out. Donk. Pop. Yeah.
Yikes. Dude, knees, back, nasty injuries.
All those leg lock motherfuckers have fucked up knees.
Dude.
Eddie just had to get his meniscus fixed, too.
Yeah.
He had a meniscus operation pretty recently.
See,
all those
shoulder,
guys
too,
like,
you
oh,
saying?
Yeah. He had shoulder surgery recently. He had back surgery recently.
Damn.
Yeah, back surgery a little over a year ago, knee surgery recently.
He's not doing that stem cell shit you're talking about, huh?
No, he hasn't. I think he did something, but he didn't do it at the place that I go to.
Hmm.
But it's just, you know, years and years of jiu-jitsu. It's just
yeah.
not good for your body. No. Everybody that I know.
As much
all
as I love
up.
Jiu-jitsu, bro, I'm telling you, I sustain most of my injuries rolling. Like,
yeah.
It's like almost like I can't get out of a jiu-jitsu session, like gi or no gi, without getting something tweaked or something, you know?
Well, I was talking the other night with some guys from Team Alpha Male, and we were talking about guys who have fake discs, how many guys have had artificial discs put in their necks and in their backs. It's a fucking terrifying number. Scary, you keep going on and on. Like, he got one too? Yeah, he's got two in his neck. Like, what? Like, he's like got trending. One in his lower back. What? Like, God damn it, he's 30. Yeah, these guys are like 30 years old with fake backs.
Combat sports are rough, man. Rough on your body.
Particularly wrestling
and
particularly jiu-jitsu. Wrestling, it seems to be a lot of the neck. And jiu-jitsu, it's neck and lower back.
Mm-hmm.
The lower back seems to get jacked on almost everybody.
I've been lucky, knock on wood, and I've been lucky I haven't really suffered any serious injuries in my training career.
I wonder, too, how much Thai training and throwing kicks, because it's so core intensive.
Mm-hmm.
Kicking is so much, so much. I think it protects you because, like, a lot of my lower back, it's very heavily muscled.
Yeah.
The lower back and the mid.
It's one of the first things like I actually look at when I'm like studying like a fighter is I look to see his back, how his back, and I'm like, this guy's going to be strong. Like, what makes you say that? Like, dude, look at his lower back specifically.
Yes,
I say that all the time. I'm like, look at his lower back. You see guys with like jacked up like lower back muscles, you know their core strength is just off the chain.
Do you have a reverse hyper in your gym?
No.
Do you have one of those?
No.
Dude, that should be standard in any gym where they wrestle. Really,
is that the inversion?
That's the one where you lie down on the table with your upper body and your lower body hangs down and hooks into this
I've seen
thing.
Them.
And it was created by Louis Simmons, that guy from West Side Barbell, the powerlifting monster. And when you lift your legs up, it strengthens your back. There it is right there.
Okay,
and
I've seen them.
On the way down, it decompresses the spine.
Really? Lengthens almost? Like lengthening the spine?
Well, it decompresses. The spine? Yeah. See, there's a video. If you show him the video, he'll get a chance to see what it is. In the video, Louis is explaining it. But we have one back here, and I've had one for a couple years now. And it's just go forward. Just go forward. And you don't need to see hear the volume. She's going up, it's strengthening her back. And then on the down, it extends and it lengthens the back and decompresses it. It's active decompression. It's one of the rare things that provides active decompression in contrast with strengthening. So it strengthens it on the way up and then loosens it on the way back. And that activating the muscles and the strengthening portion of it and then the decompression portion together, it's uniquely good for uniquely effective for strengthening and rehabilitating lower back issues.
Interesting. You got one here, you said?
Yeah. He developed it because they were trying to give him surgery. They were trying to fuse his disc together because he had a bulging disc.
Yeah.
So he was trying to figure out how to fix a bulging disc, and that's how he figured it out. But it's now like universally praised has been one of the best exercises to prevent injury, but more importantly, to rehabilitate you if you have something like that going on.
I got to check that out for sure.
It should be standard for every gym. It's one of those pieces of equipment that I think like one of the big things that happens with guys is compression.
Mm-hmm.
And very few fighters in particular spend time doing spinal decompression. Yep. Like on those inversion tables.
Yeah, I was just going to say inversion tables.
Those are great, man. They're great. Just chill on one of those teeters.
Yeah.
Chill on one of those for 10 minutes a day.
Yeah.
Just put the boots on and kick back and just and then tighten your back up and then let it loose and tighten your back up and let it loose.
I've used them before.
And you could push on the handles and give yourself some separation. You have to do something to compensate for all the pressure, right? So there's all this compression, and you've got to do something to decompress.
Yeah. I've seen something, too, like with a band around your neck. You lay on the floor, almost like put it on a doorknob, almost like, and it pulls your head up. You ever seen something like that?
I have one that's it's a thing that you put on
like
your
chin strap,
and I put it on a barbell.
Yep.
So I hook it up to the barbell, and then I sit underneath it with a chair.
Yeah, same concept,
and then
concept,
I extend
right?
my neck, like click, 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 click,
that's
click,
crazy.
It's like
2 inches taller.
Stretching, yeah.
Like you said, too, wrestling is the worst, man. Just like that always shooting that single shoot,
grabbing,
that double
and
grabbing,
palming
pulling
the back
on the
of your
neck.
Head. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it's rough. Well, Thai, too, right?
Oh, and my God. I remember one of the first experiences I had clinching with guys in Thailand, you know, because I was one of the bigger guys. They were like, I need you to clinch, you know, and these Thai dudes just hanging on my neck, hanging on my neck, you know, for an hour straight. And I've never felt anything like that, man. My neck was completely locked up. I couldn't turn. I had to actually get one of those, the neck braces there, the collars.
Really?
Yeah. I had to get like massage like every day. I was out of training probably for 4 or 5 days. I couldn't even train. It's almost like having a stiff neck, but it was horrible, man.
Yeah. Well, you got to think those muscles don't get used that much. Correct. If you're not doing that.
Correct. Yeah.
If you're not doing like neck extensions
And then I went to my trainer and I was like, how do I make my neck stronger? And he took me over to this coffee can filled with cement and a rope coming out of it. And he said, you bite the rope and you go. And I remember Ringside had like a thing like that. They put that like thing, like a strap around your head and you put the chain through a weight.
Yeah.
And
you did those.
Yeah. It's like something like that.
But biting, it seems better too.
Yeah. Because you're working the mandible as well.
Yeah.
The problem was, is everybody fucking bit on the thing in the camp. So I was like,
and the fucking breath, all the bad breath, mouthpiece breath.
I remember being in a bank in Thailand in Pattaya once, and like there was a water like thing, but there was no plastic cups. There was no like cups, like disposable cups. There was a plastic cup with a string tied to it.
Oh,
and
God.
People would just go and fill it and just lip on it and put it down. I'm like, bro, this is rough, dude. Rough.
Well, I gotta figure.
It's
that
like I'm not that thirsty.
Those moist environments, like there's so much bacteria in the air anyway. Mm.
Yeah,
like, man. how common is staph?
Dude, it's so
gyms?
Funny you say that, because you would think it would run rampant, like ringworm. Like, yeah. I remember one of the first times I got ringworm in Thailand, and I like had a Band-Aid on it, and I was clinching with one of my training partners, a Thai guy, and the Band-Aid came off, and I was like, hold on, let me go to it. And he's like, well, no, don't worry about it. And I was like, no, like, let me like cover this up. And he touched it and he like was rubbing it like, oh, dude, don't worry about that. And I was like, dude, no. It's like, it's ringworm, bro. And like, it's like the like Thai leather skin is like immune to it. They don't fucking get ringworm. They don't get staph. Like, it's weird. Like, you don't,
they don't get it.
It's not common. No, it's weird. I'm sure they do get it, but it's funny. Like, it doesn't like run rampant in the gyms. Like, you would think like a bunch of sweaty Thai dudes training with no shirts on, clinching, hanging all over each other, you know, and they're laying on the ground doing sit-ups and push-ups and all that bullshit. And it's not common. Like, there's not a lot of ringworm in the gyms. There's not a lot of staph infections. I don't know if just their body builds immunity to it. I don't know. It's just not common.
Man,
it's not
in
common, though.
American gyms, it's
rampant. Oh, my God. I remember being on the Ultimate Fighter season when I coached season 4, the comeback with Jorge, Patrick Cote, all those times. I met all those guys. Chris Lytle, et cetera, et cetera. Matt Serra was on that show. Who was it that got it? Edwin Deweese, I think, got a staph infection. And everybody's like, oh, what the hell's wrong with your skin? I was like, bro, that's like the heebie-jeebies. That's like the Matt Scabbies. Like, that's staph. And everybody was like, what? Like, what staph? And I was like, bro, that's staph infection. Like, when was the last? And I went to the UFC production team and I said, when was the last time, like, you guys cleaned the mats? Like, oh, like, we clean them, like, once a week. But I was like, whoa. I was like, bro, you got to clean these mats with, like, disinfectant every single training session. And they're like, all right, that's cool. And I was like, how about that wall, like, the padded wall? Like, oh, no, we never clean that. Like, bro, they have no shirts on. They're grappling, you know, with their backs on the wall, sweating all over the wall. And I brought it to their attention that, listen, everything needs to be cleaned in the gym.
How
stability.
Disturbing is
bro,
that?
Bro, Dana literally said, you go back and you watch like the box series. Like, I still got it. It was like DVD series. Like, and it's like literally Dana said, like, Deligrati pretty much saved the show. Both teams got staff. I was like, get the Vans detail, clean the mats, clean stability balls. I made everybody get tea tree and eucalyptus soap, you know, and it just, nobody was educated at the time about it. And it just, it's a plague, man. If I see anybody with ringworm or staph, I literally light fucking bombs in the gym and burn the fucking place down. Order new mats from Zebra and Rev Gear.
It's so common. I was just reading one of Gordon Ryan's posts on Instagram that he got MRSA for the second time.
Yeah.
And that medication-resistant staph infection, that scares the shit out of me.
Dude, I had staph. I can't really claim it. Cote, I'm not going to blame you, bro, but it was oddly enough right around the time where Cote had staph in his knee and I was camping him, and I was very active at the time training with these guys, and I got staph under my armpit, both fucking armpits. I literally had to walk around like with my arms up like this. I had wicks coming out of them. Like, nasty, dude. Staph is no good.
Wicks.
They put wicks. What they do is they make an incision. They drain the abscess because it's an abscess, essentially.
Right.
They drain the abscess.
And then they
pack it with like what literally looks like a wick from like a lantern. It's like hollow in the middle cloth. And they pack it in and they leave just a little tip out. And as the wound drains and heals, the wick comes out. So I had like these 2-inch
like a tampon string.
Basically. Yeah.
And was it medicated?
No, they clean it out. They make an incision. They clean it all out. They flush it with saline and they pack it with a wick and they dope you up with Calflex. Usually is the weapon of choice for antibiotics. I believe it's called Calflex. And
drains mojo, dude, like nothing.
Kicks it's your crazy. Ass, dude. Tired walking upstairs, everything.
That's when you see when guys fight on that.
We remember what's his name,
Luke Rockhold against Chris Weidman
and Kevin Lee recently too. Remember we noticed it during the broadcast.
Well, Kevin didn't take any medication
specifically because he knew it would zap his cardio.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the staff zapped him too.
Oh, period. Yeah, but the antibiotics on top of it, forget about it. But I remember when we called that fight. You called that fight, and I was like, dude, that staff on his. And we were talking about it. And it's almost like the guys in the truck were like, oh, no, don't mention it. Don't mention this stuff.
They told Daniel Cormier not to say anything
about it. There you
go. When I brought it up to Cormier,
that's right.
I said, is that what I staffed you? And they're like, don't bring that up.
Yeah,
and
I remember
that. That's definitely staffed, Joe.
He don't give a single fuck. That guy. I love that guy.
He's like, what are you talking about?
Exactly.
Don't talk about that.
Yeah, you got it. It was blatantly obvious.
It was so obvious. Yeah. How could anyone say to not talk about that?
It's funny, too, because I don't think the commission is supposed to allow you to fight if you got like a herpes on your lip or something funky or you got staff. They're like, bout scratch. Like,
that's
so,
what I was shocked because it was so blatant.
Yeah, exactly.
It was swollen.
And I think he put
makeup on it on the weigh-ins.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Susie touched it up a little bit.
Yeah, which is hilarious. She's complicit. Everyone's involved.
Susie's awesome. I've had times where I've had fighters. I'm like, they took a cut during the camp, like trying to kind of hide it. Airbrushed.
Isn't that crazy that you do that? Yeah, Kevin Lee, that was really unfortunate timing because I wanted to see what would happen in that fight. Hmm. I mean, and you saw Kevin get Tony down. He's beating him up
on the ground. That's right. I was just going to say, who is he fighting?
He got
Ferguson.
Mount on him.
Yeah.
He got his back.
Yeah.
Like, dude, Kevin Lee is a
monster. He is, man.
And he's fucking huge for 155 pounds.
He is. You know, I when he first emerged, and I was watching him, I was like, oh, no, I wasn't like, I don't want to say I wasn't impressed, but I had no idea, what his capabilities were. And I started watching him fight, and I was like, dude, this guy's legit. He's a serious
threat.
He's
not even in his prime.
Yeah, exactly. How old is he?
He's 26, I think, now.
Really?
25 or 26.
He's
very young.
Wow.
Yeah, find out how old Kevin Lee is. I think he's a few years from his prime. 25?
25, yeah.
25. 25.
Oh, that's young, dude.
Young as fuck.
That is young, man.
Young. Young as fuck, smart as fuck, too. In a month, he's 26.
He's a cool dude, too.
He's a very cool guy. I had him on my podcast, and I think it really changed people's perceptions of him. You realize how honest he is, and open, and intelligent, and just really considerate, and thinking about all the various aspects of his career. And even when he was talking about, other fighters, he wasn't shit-talking necessarily, whereas, really just talking about his own skills versus their skills, and even Ferguson, when he was talking about Tony, he was saying, man, this injury is a real bummer because it's going to impede what he does. Like, his whole thing is that he can do anything.
Right.
He's, loose, and he takes chances. Like, if he's got this knee that's fucked up that he doesn't trust, that could really get – I'm like, ooh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Like, if he's got a knee that he doesn't trust, it's going to keep him from being as, freewheeling, you know?
Yeah,
one of the things about Tony is he's so unpredictable.
Yeah, man.
Like, how do you prepare for a guy that just moves crazy and has knockout power and nutty endurance?
Man. Yeah. He trained with Eddie still? Was he with Planet? Yeah.
Yes, he's still with Eddie. What a freak accident, man. Imagine you're on your way to a fight, you're doing press, and you go to talk to someone, you trip over some wires.
Is that what it was? Yep. Production wires, like camera wires or something?
Yeah, in UFC Tonight.
Yeah.
And blew the fucking the ligament off the bone.
Oh, man.
Did you ever see the scar?
I haven't, no.
Oh, my God. It's like it's like a 12-inch scar.
And there was no previous injury or anything?
No.
So that literally just came out of nowhere, on a fucking wire.
He tripped on those wires and fell sideways and literally just, which is, how does a guy like that fall down even? You would think he's so athletic.
Forget when
so
it was.
Coordinated.
Back in the day we had, remember when you used to do the UFC workout rooms? And they would put, oh man, what
the
a
size
gnarly
of that fucking
scar. It's like 80 staples.
Yeah, it's nuts. That's one of the bigger knee scars I've ever seen in my life.
That is nasty scar.
Yeah, but now he's running around, he's moving.
Yeah, he's a freak, man.
They were doing some UV light or something like that on it. But, you know, he's starting to hit the bag again. Yeah. He throws kicks and punches on the bag now.
We've lost fights in the past for those, you know, like I was just going to say, we had those, the fold-out mats, like the bifold mm-hmm. mats. I remember, yep. like, somebody got their foot caught in it, rolled their ankle. It was, like, one show a long time ago. And, you know, we started talking about it. And I think it was Jimmy Gifford, who works for Lorenzo at the time. I was like, man, you need those Dahlemmer, those roll-out mats. These seams are no good, man. People are tweaking their ankles mm-hmm. left and right, man. We'd lose a fight occasionally, like, backstage, just from, like, somebody rolling their ankle in the cracks of the mats or something stupid like that. But what a freak accident to think, like, and how close. He was really close to that fight, wasn't he?
He was like a couple days out.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Kevin Randleman was backstage and he stepped on some pipes and flew through the air and landed on his head
yeah.
and knocked himself out?
It was
backstage prepping for the main event of a fight.
That's crazy.
It was like UFC 13 yeah. or 14 or some shit. It was
and they lose the main event.
They lost the main event.
Ugh, nightmare.
I don't remember who he was supposed to be fighting. I do not remember. But I remember Kevin Randleman stepped on some pipes and fell and hit his fucking head.
Yeah,
I remember. And I remember thinking, what?
Yeah.
What are the odds? Maybe he's supposed to be fighting Pedro Hizo? I do not remember who.
That's going way back. Randleman days is going
yeah.
back.
Was it Pedro Hizo? Yeah.
What? When did you come on? Like what, was
12.
Your, UFC
12.
1997. Was it Zuffer at the time or was it SEG?
No, SEG.
It was, okay.
Yeah, Bob Meyerowitz.
That's right.
Yeah. Camel McLaren hired me.
No shit.
It was Tony Blauer did it before me.
That's
they,
right.
They needed a new backstage interviewer guy.
And, so UFC 12.
Yeah. Jeez. Dothan, Alabama, son. We're supposed to be in Buffalo. Supposed to fly to Buffalo, New York, and or Albany, somewhere in New York. But New York State made it illegal, like right before.
Yeah.
So they had to change all the flights, move the octagon, fly it down to Dothan, Alabama.
Yeah.
Puddle jumper plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember those days. I was not involved with the company at the time. I think the first fight I cornered was like UFC 36 or something like that. But.
That's early in the day, too.
Yeah.
UFC 35 and a half was when I came back.
Yeah.
That's when I did my first commentary.
Was it, who's the
Chuck
first?
Chuck versus Vitor was okay, yeah. what I did.
Who's the owner of that time? Was it Art Davey? Was the guy I'm thinking
Art
of?
Art Davies was one of the original
yeah.
guys.
Yeah.
He was a part of SEG.
Yeah.
It was Art Davies, Bob Meyerowitz.
Yeah.
And I guess Horian Gracie was involved in the very, very beginning.
Yeah. I remember we did the 20-year Zuffa, 20 years or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're backstage. Well, we're coming into to the MGM in the back of the arena. And, you know, everybody's pulling up, you know, got the Ferraris, Lambo is pulling up. And Art Davey pulls up in a fucking Saturn. And I was like, oh, boy, have time changed. Dude, times have changed.
Wow, it's really?
Like a busted like Nevada plate.
You didn't get in on
like,
the payday.
Oh man.
You missed the payday.
I was like, fuck, times have definitely changed. Lambos, Ferraris, like blacked out SUVs, and then a Saturn rickety rackety come squeaking
UFC
up.
Bought,
great dude though. I like
they Zuffa bought the UFC for $2 million.
That's right. Yeah.
Think of that.
Yeah. And they what? $4 billion was the sale price? Talk about profit on return.
Yeah.
Return of Jesus. Investment.
But it's a long time. I mean yeah. they bought it in 2001, right?
And you can imagine how much money the Fertittas, Lorenzo and Frank and Dana, how much yeah. money they put into, you know. So
yeah.
It's not like they bought it for a clean $2 million and had smooth sailing and then sold out, you know.
Well, they were in the hole for $40 million by the time 2005 rolled around. Hmm. So 2005 was the first season of The Ultimate Fighter, and they were in the hole $40 million
wow.
while they're in production, and they were trying to sell the UFC. And Lorenzo called Dana the next day and said, "Fuck it, let's just keep going."
Yeah.
Like he was saying, like, see if anybody wants to buy it. And then yeah. he decided, fuck it, let's just keep going.
Yeah, yeah. Glad he did. Here we
yeah.
are.
Yeah. Yeah, but you got to think that the amount of money they have to make every month.
Oh, man.
Just to make the nut on $4
billion. Exactly, yeah. It's not an easy company to run,
yeah.
I can imagine. Yeah.
I mean, I don't really talk to Ari much when he's back there.
Yeah.
And I just say hi, shake
yeah.
his hand.
I've never met him, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how well it's doing.
I've never met him. I just missed him actually in Dubai. I was on Lorenzo threw me a fucking big layup and sent me over to Dubai to train Prince Tarnoon.
You've trained him several times, right?
I had one trip. I spent about a month there, but I ended up just, instead of teaching him Muay Thai, I just ended up doing jiu-jitsu with Marcelo Garcia every day, which was fucking awesome. Right. I show up in Dubai, like, it was funny because we got off the plane. The first they sent me airline tickets. Lorenzo's like, hey, you want to go to Dubai? You know, train Tarnoon?
I was it's like, Abu absolutely. Dhabi, right?
Yeah, it was Abu Dhabi, Dubai. I'm sorry. Yeah, Abu Dhabi, but Dubai's like right there. So, you know, so going to Abu Dhabi, like, I got the airline tickets. I was like, what the fuck is this? ETS? Something airlines, at least some bullshit flying some fucking weird airlines. And I looked it up and I was like, oh shit, there's like gold toilets and shit. And I looked and I told him, I was like, I need an assistant to go with me. Like, you may have an assistant. And I was like, perfect. I looked and it was $9,000 each a ticket. It's like $18,000 for like the flights. It was in like full beds, like little capsules. You could get fillets and shit. But we got there. There was nobody at the airport. And I'm like, fuck, dude, I don't know who to call. What's going on? I had no idea, right? Some guy walks over to me and he hands me a box, a mobile phone. And I open the box and there's a phone. He goes, the phone will ring when he needs you. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And then a stretched out 7 Series BMW comes. And like the guy's like, you know, he comes over, he grabs my bag, he puts him in, and he takes us to a place called the Twin Towers. You motherfuckers. Oddly enough, right after 9/11, I'm like, oh, I get it. Fucking Twin Towers. Fucking put the American guys up in the Twin Towers. And like, we get there and it's the middle of night. Me and my buddy Neil, one of my students at the time, Neil Legallo, we ended up going up to the room and there was like nothing there. It was like no furniture. Like the beds weren't, it wasn't like a hotel. It was like an apartment because we were going to be there for a month. And I was like, dude, is there like a fucking Target open right now and get some bed sheets and stuff? I need like soap. I need there was nothing there. And we literally sat in that apartment going across the street to the market where we were the only white dudes in the market, just getting like cans of like tuna and olive oil and like bread just to dip it in. We were like surviving for like 2 days just staring at the fucking phone every day. Like, wait, it's going to fucking ring. I know it's going to ring.
He didn't provide food.
Well, listen, so then the phone rang. And he said, there'll be a driver outside. You know, when you get there, like when you go downstairs, there'll be a driver outside. You're going to go to the palace. So we go downstairs, there's a driver outside, and he gives us the whole rundown about do not make eye contact with the prince. Only call him his highness. And this and that. I'm like, dude, really? This is trippy as fuck, dude.
And you got to do jiu-jitsu with this guy.
So no, I'm supposed to train him in Muay Thai. He wanted to learn Muay Thai because he asked Lorenzo, like, you know, who you do Muay Thai with. I always wanted to learn Muay Thai. So Lorenzo mentioned me, and that's how I got over there. So I get to the palace and I show up in this workout room and, I'm just sitting there. I'm like, dude, this is so weird. Like, what? No one's telling us what's going on. And Marcelo Garcia walks in with a gym bag. And I was like, holy fucking shit, it's Marcelo Garcia. We ended up like, Tarnoon came out. His Highness Tarnoon came out. And we did a little bit of Muay Thai. But his passion for jiu-jitsu was so overwhelming that all he wanted to do is do jiu-jitsu. He's like, do you like jiu-jitsu? And I was like, yeah, I love jiu-jitsu. He's like, let's do jiu-jitsu. and I ended up training every day with Marcelo Garcia for like a month straight. And we did in a month's time, we did like maybe 3 hours of Muay Thai.
Really?
You know, yeah. And then as like going back to the Ari story, as I was leaving, like I think Ari was coming in doing some type of business with his Highness at the time or something. So we just missed each other. That was my point to tell you about Ari.
What I've is never he like him. Hanging out with? Because all that eye contact shit seems to go out the window, you know, once you're around him.
Yeah, well, once you get to know him, once I got to know him and, you know, I got a little more comfortable around him, like he was super cool. Like super cool dude.
How weird.
Really intense dude, man. Like everything to the extreme. Like, I'm going to hike Mount Everest. He hikes fucking Mount Everest. He's
really?
Like, oh, dude, everything. Like, he had like an, what's an elevation chamber, like an elevation tent and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, he had just everything. He was, anything he did was like to the extreme. I mean, obviously, like, you're talking like an extreme dude, a trillionaire, like, can do anything he wants.
Is he a trillionaire?
Trillion.
This is the thing that people don't understand when you hear about the world's richest men. Those are people with public incomes.
Yeah.
This is not. Correct. Oligarchs.
Yeah, he's above and beyond fucking Forbes Monarchs. 500. Or whatever.
Yeah, he's literally a prince.
He was funny. He told me a story about how Henzo, and I've laughed at this with Henzo. Henzo, they had this big horse race that they do, and they race across the desert. And they needed another rider. And you do it like with no saddle or something. It's this crazy like long like 20, 30 mile horse race or something like that. And I don't know the details of it, but Henzo was there at the time, and they were like, we need another rider. And Endo's like, fuck it, I'll ride. And they're like, no, bro, you don't understand. Like, it's like, you got like a fucking scarf around your throat and you're like, just get on a horse and you go for like whatever it is, how long it is. And Henzo did the race. He like survived the race. It was crazy.
Whoa.
Yeah. Ask him about it sometime. It's funny telling the story.
Yeah, Henzo just won.
I saw that.
51 years old.
I can't, you know, I was saying to myself, what's he doing? Like, is he going to fight again? He's really doing this. Like,
he fought
Yuki
Kondo.
I know.
And he took his back with he took him down with a very slick move.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
He hooked the leg,
yeah,
and then went through the underside and mm-hmm. butterflied the back of the other leg and yeah. dragged him down.
I saw the finish. I didn't see the fight. How long did the fight last? It wasn't that long.
First round.
Yeah, it was first round.
Henzo, second round?
Second round, yeah.
Second round?
Henzo's still getting at it, huh? At 50.
Go earlier than this so you can see the actual takedown, because the takedown's slick.
Yep.
So he dives in, and a very dangerous guy, Yuki Kondo.
Yep.
Yuki Kondo stopped Salu Ribeiro.
Yep.
Like, Yuki Kondo was a beast. Vicious fucking striker. But, you know, also 50 years old himself, I think. So Henzo gets a single.
There
but watch
goes,
this. Look at that trip.
Yep.
See that?
Puts
how
a
he
hook
hooks
in. Yeah.
And butterflies the opposite leg.
Ugh.
That is a – I love that move.
Master Henzo Gracie. Unbelievable, man. Such a great person. Great jiu-jitsu. Has been an inspiration to us all, man.
51
love that
years
fucking
old.
Guy.
And looks like he's 51 with his body.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't look like he's juiced to the tits.
You know what? He's in this position right now. He's got his back. He's like, I got you, motherfucker.
Yeah.
He's like, Henzo gets on your back, and that's a wrap pretty much.
Yeah, and Kondo was always a striker.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Is this like – 50-year-old division going to manifest or something? They're like talking about this Masters League or something like that. Is it actually going to manifest?
I don't know, man. But in Japan, they'll have anybody fight.
Yeah.
They
the
have
freakier the better.
Gabby Garcia fight old housewives.
Yeah.
They don't give a fuck. They have grandmas fight in Japan. They'll do anything. And then what they're doing in 1FC, I mean, they're basically – look, they're rehabilitating careers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean – look at fucking Brandon Vera. Brandon Vera's a monster over
is
there.
Is he still?
Now.
He is active. That's
he's
right,
the heavyweight
yeah.
champ.
That's right. Yeah,
one of dude. Yeah. You ever see what he looks like now?
No, I haven't even followed it in a while. Yeah,
he looks like a poster boy for USADA sniff test.
Oh shit!
He's gigantic. His neck starts at the top of his head. Look at
look
him.
Look at him. He's yoked.
He's a huge heavyweight now.
He was always big, but he's yoked up now, huh?
Oh yeah, dude. He's for sure on Mexican supplements. Good for him. Go for it.
He's got that Tijuana test.
I don't know what. See if you can find a video of him fighting, because he looks like a fucking gorilla now. What does it say he weighs? Was it does it say there?
He was
he's
always
40
a big,
years old.
40
now.
Age 40.
Yeah, 6'4".
6'2", 230 it says there.
He was a very light 250
now. 250
now. Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. See if you can find a video of him. Go deep into the fight. See how big he is.
Oh,
he's so big.
He is a big
dude. I mean, he's a real heavyweight now.
Yeah.
Is
he living in Asia now? Where is he at?
I don't think so.
Originally
I think he's
San Diego, right?
He's still San Diego.
Yeah. Oh, head kick from hell.
Yeah, dude, he's a monster.
His jits is good, too. Dean Lister guy,
yeah.
right? His jits is solid.
Well, I think he started with Lloyd Irvin.
Okay, yep, you're right.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, he's gone to a bunch of camps.
Yeah.
I had a chance to train with him when he was at Eddie's place at the old Bomb Squad.
Yeah.
He came in, and it was before he fought in the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying to him, like, what weight are you fighting in? He's like, heavyweight. I was like, wow. He didn't look like a big guy.
He wasn't a big heavyweight
at
the time.
He was
no.
very light for a heavyweight, but he was fucking people up because he
good
was.
Good Muay Thai, too. Melchior Menor, I think he trained with, too, in San Diego.
Rob Kamen.
Rob Kamen.
He was Rob Kamen's guy mm-hmm. for yep. a while. And then him and Rob had a dispute. About percentage
yeah.
or payments or something
yeah.
like that. You know,
yeah. There was a kid though that I think managed him in my area. I forget his name back in the day, but he had some money issues too.
I don't know what happened with Rob. Rob vanished. Never see him anymore.
Yeah, man. It's funny. He's like he was around for a while and he disappeared. Then he'd come back around for a while, and then before you know it, I saw him like fucking eating fucking space cake on Instagram in Holland. I was like, all right, I guess he's in Holland now. Like, I don't know what the fuck
is
he's
that
doing.
Where he is. He's back.
I think
in
so.
Holland?
Yeah, I think he had like just some ups and downs in his life, and he just needed to get the fuck out, just go back to his roots. I saw him like videos of, like him in like a field, like frolicking and fucking Amsterdam. I was like, my man, Rob.
He
I love
some,
that guy though.
Something that he was putting together, like Cayman 101,
yeah,
like
yeah,
some workout,
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, 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 yeah. He was nasty back in the day, man. He was like one of the first foreigners that Kriotong at the Siatong camp. Like I remember Duke Rufus on the podcast years ago was talking about Rob Cayman,
yeah,
Siatong. He was like one of our first like foreign foreign superstars like you know, him, Remendecker, those
guys. He was a
big
guy too for for a guy that was fighting the Thai.
He was
way bigger than everybody else.
Now, what I loved about him too, as a southpaw, he would attack the back leg a lot.
Oh yeah, it's the
worst way to take a low kick.
I was just gonna say that.
Yeah,
he would do that slight step to the side and go across both legs.
Jeb
across the front.
Jeb McLeod.
What is that? What are you saying?
Jeb, like J-E-B, Jeb.
What does that mean?
Jeb means hurt.
Jeb means hurt?
Yeah, hurt.
Jeb Hoy?
If I say Jeb, that means hurt. If I want to say it hurts a lot, I say Mark, like my name Mark. Yeah. Jeb Mark. Like happy DJ, very happy DJ Mark. And then you can throw the Thai twang, go, oh, DJ Mark, Lee.
Could you read Thai?
I'm just now, my brother Joshua, who is one of my students back home, he's a Buddhist monk, a white dude with a man bun, drives a Jeep. Like, you never know.
Cut that man bun while he sleeps. Stop that.
He's teaching me how to read and write. I can speak. I knew I could speak Thai pretty well when I actually started talking to people on the phone, like people from Thailand on the phone. Because if I'm in front of you, like, and it's like any language, like you go, like you fly, like what time? Like you can fucking caveman language and you can figure it out, you know? But once I started talking to like Thai friends on the phone, I was like, dude, I got this. Like, I'm not using like my hand signs and whatnot. So,
all right. So like if you had to say someone in Thai, like the weigh-ins are today, but it's not the real weigh-in. It's a ceremonial weigh-in. The real weigh-in started at 8 a.m. What would you say?
The Thais don't even go that far. That's way too much.
Really?
Yeah, dude. I'll explain Thai language to you right now. Okay. You ready? Let's take the verb to like. Okay. Like you like something.
Right.
Chop.
Right.
Like karate chop. Chop.
Right.
That means I like.
Okay.
I take the word my, M-A-I.
Right.
If I put it before it, if I want to ask you if you like something,
right.
I just say chop my. That means my's at the end. That's I'm asking you a question. Chop like my. Do you like? If you like it, you say chop.
Right.
If you don't like it, you put the my in front and go my chop. It's literally like, no like. It's fucking cave language, bro. So if I'm like, all right, you know, take the word. Like I said, like go. Like bye. Bye means go.
Right.
Bye my. Are you going? My bye. Not going. If you're going, you just go bye.
Wow.
Dude, that's the crash course of Thai right there. But the best in the kingdom, bro, is knowing the Thaiglish. Me and my trainer, Kru Toi Sihatong, the son of Kriyatong, always taught me Thaiglish because it was the fastest way from A to B. It's like, all right, if you want to say water, like it's nam. But rather than say nam, you just say water. I'm like, oh, shit. Like airport, Sanam Bin. Just go airport.
So do they know what airport means?
If you say Sanam Bin and you say it like with the wrong tone, like it's something different. Like it's like the word my dog, horse, come.
Oh, Jesus.
That's why you can really get fucked up trying to speak Thai in Thailand. That's why I teach all my students in Crash Course, bro, Thaiglish. Like you want water? What the? You want to go to the airport? Airport. Passport? Passport.
You just have to say it. Like you just would say with it. You. Accent.
It's literally like you almost like mocking them. Like, and you, but you're not. Like they get it right away.
Oh, that's so strange.
It's weird. Like I've had like literally people like, dude, like don't hit. You're like fucking ranking on the guy. Like, no, I'm not,
well,
dude. I'm talking.
When we
to
went
him.
To places, they all spoke English. Almost everybody,
for the most part, nowadays. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Nowadays, for the most part, yeah.
So everybody speaks. Depending on where you go, it was more difficult to communicate.
Well, there was less tourists, you know.
Right.
And now, you know, it's plagued with like Germans and Russians. It's like everybody's going to Thailand.
There was.
I saw a Ferrari driving down the street for the first time ever, like a couple years ago in Thailand. I was like, a fucking Ferrari in Pattaya City, Thailand. It's all Russian money. Like a lot of Russians go there with big Russian money, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of like gangster activity
big
in
time.
Pattaya, right?
Specifically like Russian, like Dutch Russian.
Yeah. What are they doing over there?
I don't know. Drug I don't
trade?
Ask. I don't know.
Hey, who
fucking
knows,
selling
cares?
Selling people. I don't fucking know.
Ooh.
Can buy a liver for fucking 500 baht in the street. Like I don't know, bro. I don't know, but I definitely know that there was a time when I was going to Thailand and it felt like Thailand, and then I went back once, and it was like everybody was speaking Russian, and there was like white dudes everywhere, and like all foreigners, and I was like,
why do you think Russian? Why do you think?
I don't know. Well, it's a lot of Europeans vacation in Thailand too. You know, yeah. It's like we go to like in America, we go to like Aruba, Bahamas, Jamaica. Mm-hmm. Like that's our vacation. Like the Brits, like from the UK, they're like, let's go holiday in Thailand. You know, they go to Thailand. Australians, they go to Thailand. Like they go to Southeast Asia. So it's just, I don't know, just it's a big tourist attraction, Thailand, for Europeans and for now Russians.
I saw a lot of older European or American looking men yep. with hot young yep. Thai chicks.
Yep, absolutely.
And I was like, look at that.
Thuk mak, really cheap. You get a fucking great deal over there. Yeah. They run specials like.
Yeah.
No, you see it all the time. The worst is like the fat German guy in the fucking man thong walking down the street with a fucking little boy, like a 14-year-old boy.
Oh, really?
Oh, dude. I've seen some weird shit in Thailand, man. Yeah. Ooh. As I said earlier, man, it's a land of smiles, but there's not always smiles.
Like, why is it worse if it's a 14-year-old boy versus a 14-year-old girl? Is it?
It's all the same at that point. I don't know, man.
I don't think
I don't know.
Worse. I think the 14-year-old boy could probably take it better.
I never thought of that. And I don't want to.
It's probably less scarring if that's what he's into.
Yeah. So you don't see a lot of that shit up in Chiang Mai. Like, it's not like,
No.
You were more like the elephant country and like,
yes.
That's real Thailand to me.
Yeah.
Like that Chiang Mai, that northern Thailand is like the real Thai culture, you know, and then as you go down south, you get more touristy, you get more freak shows, you get
elephants were everywhere, like in terms of art.
Yeah.
Elephant art.
It's huge, prevalent. It's
why
very
are they
prevalent
so into
Thai
elephants?
Culture. It's Southeast Asia. That's the fucking animal god, like that's it. Like the elephant's everything to them. The Thai boxing style, well, at first it was what they call Krabby Krabong, which is known as in Thailand as Phandab, which means like long, short. And that's the old depiction you see of swordplay, like the Thais using swords and they dressed up these elephants in like armor and like rode baskets and just shot arrows from the top of the elephant. So the elephant has always been a huge part of that, even in warfare. Yeah, they use the elephants in combat. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So they would like put these armor plates on the trunks of the elephants and the body of the elephant, and they would put baskets on them and they would just go off into battlefield and just be plucking people with arrows and just dropping spears on them. So the elephant was always prevalent to the success of Thai culture.
That's crazy. Can you imagine going to battle riding a fucking elephant?
So you think it's something up there on the internet with fucking
battle
elephants?
Wasn't that in 300?
Yeah, movie, something 300? Like that. Yeah,
there you go.
Yep.
Fuck, man.
Yeah, the Thais were doing that shit against the Burmese like back in the day. They'd dress them all up.
Imagine you're in a fucking war with somebody and you see a bunch of dudes come towards you on elephants.
Dude, like, a giant fucking horse like coming at me is one thing, but an elephant, like, dude, we're outnumbered here. We got to fight them.
They're so big, man.
They are.
I was so nervous around them.
Big time.
It's weird. We went to a place that rehabilitates them, and they reintroduce them back into the wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
You didn't ride it, though, I think.
Yeah,
you were saying,
I rode it.
You did?
I didn't like it, though.
Yeah.
I just didn't think it was necessary.
Right.
It's like, this thing doesn't want me to ride it. Lincoln rejects the King of Siam's offer of elephants. This is in 1862.
Civil War. Abraham Lincoln.
Wow.
I found that camel thing the other day, and I was like, I wonder if they used them here.
What, so camels?
I found something the other day when we were talking about something, and I stumbled across another article that said there were camels in the West, and they used them to travel and carry things to help develop the West.
Yep.
At some point, they abandoned them, and there was like a they called them the Red Ghost. It was like a myth of this mythical animal that was 30 feet tall, supposedly ate grizzly bears, like I told you. And
damn.
Like
that was a camel?
It ended up being a camel. Yeah, people were just shooting them on sight because they didn't know what it was.
That's
so
crazy.
So it says,
man.
Lincoln pointed out that steam power had already taken the need for heavy animal power.
Yeah,
of this
I was just going to say, the train, that's the railroad system coming into play right there. They're like, Lincoln was like, fuck you and your elephants, man. We got trains, dude.
Yeah, I guess. But once the battle actually starts, when you hear them trumpet, like we were pretty close to one when it let out, like maybe within like 15 yards, and it just went. And you're like, whoa.
Serious animal.
In real life, that is so loud.
Yeah.
And they're majestic, man. Oh,
they have like such a presence.
It was raining out constantly there. You know, it was during the rainy season. Yep. So this elephant was moving through this unbelievably beautiful, lush, green landscape with like fog and mist.
Cool as fuck.
And then he
Chiang Mai's beautiful.
Huge tusks, and he lets out that trumpet, and you're like, whoa, that's crazy. A crazy animal.
Yeah, man. It's got a serious presence being around a fucking
elephant.
And these
dudes just walk right up to him, pat it, and touch it. Like, they were really well cared for.
Yeah.
But we went to a tiger sanctuary.
I was just
going to
say, did you do the tiger thing too?
That was the opposite.
Pat the tigers.
That was no, I didn't like that at all. They were drugged up. Oh, they had to be. NyQuil tigers. That was disturbing.
They gotta be, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, there you go.
There, in war.
Yep.
Well, the guy's got a cannon
on top of it.
He's got a fucking cannon on the top of an elephant.
What in the fuck? That dude
crazy.
Has a cannon.
He
that
does
is
legit.
A cannon. That's a legit cannon.
There's
right?
a Civil War cannon
machine
on the top of. He's
one.
Got a machine gun. Look at, he's got a 50 cal.
And what year is this?
This is a picture that shows up with that.
Yeah, with
Lincoln.
The Lincoln
and
the
elephants.
Yeah.
Wow.
Trippy, dude.
Fucking elephants, man.
A 50 cal. Look at this thing. See?
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at all the guns.
Guns
all
and
that,
spears.
Look at all the shit in the...
See,
what
there you
in
go.
The fuck,
there you go.
Man.
That's what I was talking about
that,
right there.
That is the shittiest way to see an army coming towards you. Riding elephants.
It's like Braveheart. You're like, do not retreat.
Yeah.
Hold your ground. Fuck you.
They're such peaceful animals, too. It's,
yeah.
It's such a... They eat so much, too. You can't believe how much they eat.
That's the thing, yeah. Dude, they walk around in the streets of Pattaya. Like, a handler will walk them up and down, like, the city streets just for, like, then they give you, like, fruit to feed them, like, papaya. They're like, hey, you want to feed the elephant? And you, like, tip the guy. And they're like, you see, like, an elephant, like, walking down the street through traffic in Pattaya. It's fucking weird.
Huh.
It's cool, though.
But every now and then, you see them just get pissed.
Ugh. Yeah, do you ever see, like, the Elephants Gone Wild videos?
Yeah, when they're mistreated.
Hey.
They start tipping over cars like they're made out of cardboard.
I've seen that.
They're like,
that's
fuck
right.
Everything.
Stampeding, they stomping their trainers, all pissed off.
Apparently, they have tigers or wild in Thailand as well. They really do have tigers there.
Yeah. The tiger is another one of the Thai animals.
Do you think that it's maybe something in their diet that protects them from staph and from ringworm and all that jazz?
In terms of the fighters?
Yeah.
Perhaps because they eat such spicy food. Is that
I was wondering.
Maybe related?
Yeah.
Because they, when I tell you Thai spice, like some of the kids from the camp would literally be like dripping sweat, like eating the spicy. Like sweating, like dripping profusely, like sweating, eating food.
I was.
Yeah.
When I was
do you
over
like spicy
there,
food?
Yeah, I love
do
spicy
you?
Food. And I told them to go hard.
Yeah.
I said, do it like you would do it.
Yeah.
How you like? Like fucking juice it up, baby.
Yeah.
And they didn't. They fucking, they said
I remember one of the first trips we had to Thailand. I was with one of my buddies and that went over it. And he ordered some dish and the Thais were like, no, that's hot. That's spicy. And he's like, no, it's all good. Like, no, that's really spicy. Like, he's like, no, it's good. I like spicy food. I'll just drink a lot of water or whatever. He goes, even hot for Thai people. And I was like, bro, are you listening to what he's saying? Like,
come on,
even hot
learn.
For but he didn't know any better, and he went for it. And I'm telling you, bro, there was three of us in a hotel room in Pattaya, Thailand, and I woke up in the middle of the night with him fucking shooting ass piss out of his ass, soaked the mattress, the bed, the sheets. He's found him in a ball on the bathroom floor, dude. We had to take this kid to the nearest hospital. He couldn't. We had to ride him on the bike. We had to ride three people, one driving, the kid in the middle, and me behind holding him up because he was, like, out of it.
From spicy food?
Dude, he got so, like...
Sure it wasn't food poisoning?
No. It was just the spices just kicked his ass so bad. He probably burnt a hole, like an ulcer in his stomach, dude. He was in the hospital for, like, 3 days on an IV. He got a bill for, like, fucking $9, and we were out. That was a wrap. But he never ate the fucking same dish again, though.
That's
spicy as
crazy.
Fuck. Yeah, I don't fuck with the spices too much. I love Thai food, and I'll experiment with it, but I'm not like, if my mouth is so hot and I can't taste the food, I don't enjoy it. I'm just like, this
that
is too
doesn't
much.
Seem right to me. That seems like it would be more of a food poisoning issue.
It could have been, but all I know is that I'll never forget the smell of that hotel room. Oh, it was brutal, dude. You know it's bad when it soaks through the mattress.
Oh.
And you know what the Thais do? They fucking flip it over. Next. I remember my buddy rented a house, like a little like village house behind the camp. And this Australian guy was like, hey, your mate's fucking pretty scrappy, huh? I was like, what do you mean? He's like, man, he lives rough, man. I know what like you like to do the Thai thing and you know, but you know he's got fucking money. You don't have to live like a fucking bum, you know? And I was like, all right, why? What's the matter? He's like, man, the fucking house he's living in, man, a fucking woman died of a fucking snake bite. Died in her fucking bed, got bit by a snake. And I'm like, what? So I told my buddy, bro, he flipped the mattress over. It was fucking soaked in blood. They flipped the mattress and they fucking rented to the next foreigner, like, coming in.
Ooh.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. And I remember, like, literally going to visit him and, like, you know, taking your shoes off, going in his little fucking one-room hut, and then going to put my shoes on back. And he's like, shake your sneakers. Shake them out. I'm like, what? I'd shake a fucking tarantula out of my sneakers. You got to shake your sneakers. You got to shake your sneakers before you go running in the morning. That was one of the first things I learned in Thailand.
Scorpion shit.
Dude, the first time I went to Thailand, like, I was jumping on the tires. You know, I don't know if you're familiar with, they have, like, a truck tire they lay down and they bounce on them. So it's great.
What's that for?
It's literally like jumping rope, calf strength. It's like jumping rope, but it's awesome because it's not pounding on your joints. So you get the bounce of the tire. And they just kind of alternate stance and you bounce on the tire, and it's like, you know, your warm-up. It's part of your warm-up. So I'm bouncing on the tires, and this jacked Thai guy that comes walking out of the room, and he grabs a pair of gloves, and they usually put the laces over the ropes. They hang the gloves to dry over the ropes, and he's like mean as fuck looking. He puts his hand in the glove. He goes, and he pulls his hand out, and a fucking tarantula hit the ground. Literally, you could hear the weight of the spider, like, boom. It, like, I heard it hit the cement, like the weight of the spider. And this fucking thing moved so fast, covered about 12 feet, and jumped up 4 feet into a heavy bag and crawled in between the crack of the leather of the heavy bag. And I was like, what the fuck was that? And my buddy goes, oh, that's a bird-eating spider. And I was like, a bird-eating? Why do they call it a – wait a minute. It can fucking catch birds? I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, and then literally every time I put my gloves on, that I would, like, peek in them and, like, tap on it and, like, walk away and, like, look at the glove, like, kick the glove a little bit and, like, all right, one's good. Let's try the other one on. Like, every morning, just, like, shaking scorpions out of your sneakers and stuff.
You want to know trippy. Something crazy? We never had a rat problem here at all. Mm. We had nothing. Mm-hmm. And then my dog was here one day. I brought the dog by. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, we started having rat problems.
Weird.
And then Jamie looked it up, and rats are attracted to dogs.
Feces?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought
the main thing that rats eat is dog shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I was
just
going to
say, got to be the feces. Yeah.
So we literally didn't have any problem. And then Jamie was like, dude, there's rat shit here. We found rat shit. And then Jeff, the other guy who works here, found a rat and killed it.
Yeah.
He big grabbed rats? It by the tail.
Ooh.
And just smacked that motherfucker. How gangster is that?
Dude.
That's
he
gangster.
Grabbed it by the
he
tail.
He saw the tail poking out from behind a box, and he grabbed it and
fuck
smacked it on the ground and killed
dude.
It.
I'm good with rats.
But it was because Marshall was running around here that the rats smelled that the dog had been in there, and they got in there. Look at this.
It's crazy.
Dog poop attracts rats because they like to eat it, plain and simple. In fact, dog poop is said to be the number one food source for rats in developed areas.
Wow.
But meanwhile, Marshall didn't even shit in here.
Just the smell, they might go. Wherever it's the smell, like smoke and fire.
Well, he pissed outside, and he accidentally pissed in my gym. He lifted his leg to pee on the rogue box, the step up box. Yep. And I go, hey, cut the shit, we're inside. And then I took him outside, and then he finished his piss. So maybe the rat could smell the piss.
I was just going to say, the rat smells it.
That's fucked up, though, man.
That is fucked up.
We never had a problem.
I wonder how it works with, like, those rat terriers. They have dogs for that shit. Like, a little rat terrier. Get a few of those little motherfuckers running
those
around.
Those little motherfuckers.
Right?
Those little things never shut up.
Yap.
They're go, go, go. My friend Vicky Lewis from News Radio, one of the actresses on News Radio, she had a Jack Russell.
Yeah, there you go.
Great.
Great dog.
Great tons little dog. Of
energy. It's a big dog in a little dog's body. Like a huge attitude. Like they step up to like big mastiffs and fucking punk them. They're cool, man.
Well, they're little rat killers.
Yeah, they are. They're rat terriers. Like they're terriers.
Did you ever see that documentary on Netflix about rats?
Mm-mm.
Horrific.
Really?
Horrific.
Like just in terms of infestation and whatnot.
It's disgusting how many of them there are in big cities. Like you realize like how what a real issue it is.
Dude,
and how
my wife freaks the fuck out if she sees a fucking rat.
She's smart.
Well, we had like a little incident. We were fucking parked at a parking garage on the 4th of July. We parked the car and we're walking down to watch the fireworks. And she's standing there and she fucking felt something on her foot. And she looked at it. It was a giant fucking rat chewing on her fucking nail polish. She's like,
Jesus Christ.
Freaked the fuck out. Never been the same. You literally, like my son Dante always fucks with her. He's like, Mom, look, a rat. And she fucking freaks the fuck out. Right? She's like, Dante, that's not funny. Stop that shit. And we all laugh at it. It's fucking hilarious. So, deathly afraid of rats. Rats are nasty, dude.
They're so gross.
Rats are nasty.
In the documentary, they're good for something, though.
Don't they control something in terms of population? They have, like, benefits.
They're good at keeping rat populations high.
Yeah. That's about it.
What are they good for?
They're good for cleaning up dog shit.
Yeah.
That's nasty.
Can you imagine that's their number one source of food?
It's gross.
What the fuck, man?
They must have horrible breath.
Yeah. What a creepy little survivor. But the documentary on Netflix is brilliant. It really,
I gotta check
really
it out.
Is good. And yeah. in one of the scenes, they have these rat terriers tearing them apart.
Yeah.
Where they're digging into these holes and the rats come out and the dogs just grab them and mangle them.
That's what they're for. What's up?
Do you think they're like, I just read something quickly and it doesn't really say much. You think they just like they eat trash and they help us?
No.
Die? Yeah. No.
I could throw trash away. We
they
don't do. Need
they control some population. they're good. They got to be good for fucking something. I don't know.
Well, there's an ecosystem, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Every animal has its little spot.
Dude, we get the big Boston rats. They literally they fucking punk cats. They look like they're like the size of like a possum. They're like way bigger than like any jacked up squirrel or anything like that. They're just big. The triangle tails, like nasty.
They're survivor rats, rather. They're out in that cold winter and they figure out a way to
them
get under
fucking
the ground.
Boston rats, they got accents and shit. They're like, dude, pack the car.
Little fucking scally cap on.
Running around eating dog shit.
Do you ever think about bailing the fucking winters there and everything? Does it get to you?
All the time. All the time, yeah. I mean, my parents are elderly. Like, I got to keep an eye on them. And all my family's in Boston and my business is in Boston. But, you know, luckily I travel a lot. So it's kind of like the vent. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I get away and I'll fucking do like a day or two on a beach somewhere at a UFC event. Like, and that'll be like a little recharge. But man, as I get older, I never really was like, you know, overwhelmed with winters until I started getting older. And now I'm like, dude, my body hurts. My muscles ache. My joints ache. The cold's nasty, especially that New England cold, man. Where it's like wet cold.
It takes so long.
You got the fuck out. I remember we talked about this. You're like, fuck winter, fuck snow, like, fuck that.
Well, here's the thing. I like some places where it gets cold. Like, I love Colorado.
Yeah, I remember you lived there.
I love it.
Yeah.
I'd move back there.
Yeah.
If we, Jamie and I have talked about it, like, this shit gets too crazy.
It's a different
here.
Cold, though. It's like the.
It's fine.
Yeah. It's not as bad as like the New England winter. It's just like wet, nasty.
Four wheel drive, snow tires, warm clothes, fireplace, good.
Archery.
Just do it. It's just. In Colorado, it's sunny.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
Good point.
Colorado's sunny like 300 plus days a year. Yeah. Boston, you go through months with that gray shit in the sky.
So true.
We don't see past the clouds.
No,
you never
you're
see nothing. Just a dull gray blanket.
Hanging over your head, follows you around.
And the women, the attitude they have. Like, what are you going to do for me?
Well, you wonder why they're like that.
It's
miserable.
Depressing.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what, though. Boston in the summer, I love Boston in the summer, man.
Oh, it's amazing.
As soon as, like, the sun's out, guns out, everybody's running around, girls are dressing half-dressed.
Everybody looks happy.
Exactly. Like, everybody's happy. Everybody's chilling. Yeah. Boston in the summer is cool. I like Boston. And I'm a Boston native. I always will be, you know, true and true, but definitely not a fan of the winters.
You think you're going to bail someday?
Probably, yeah.
Where are you going to go?
That's a good question. Here? Possibly. You looking for work? You hiring?
No. Listen, if I was going to hire a Muay Thai coach,
there you go.
Start up a gym.
I like it. We do that.
They could
I've
use
almost
one
relocated
out here.
A few times.
They could use one out here. Honestly,
yeah.
There's not like a real dedicated Muay Thai gym anywhere near me.
Yeah, I got offers. You know, obviously, like working. You know, for the company and whatnot. You know, some. Offers to move to Vegas and whatnot. And at first, it's like, fuck Vegas. I'll never live in Vegas.
That's
but then
like,
I started hanging around with like the right people and like
Henderson.
Out of Summerlin, like where like Lorenzo lives, like hanging out, going to like football games with Lorenzo and the family. Like, dude, there's like families, little kids riding bikes down the street. It's like
normal.
It's normal. It felt normal. Like Summerlin in Vegas felt normal to me. Like I felt like I could actually live in Summerlin. Like, you know,
the thing about it is
I need to be near the ocean.
All connected to the evil dick of Vegas.
Yeah.
It's all like all the jizz comes out of the evil dick, and
veiny,
that's what powers. It
throbbing
powers all
veiny
those
cock.
Communities. Those communities wouldn't be it's there so true. If it wasn't no, for the, right. the casino.
You're absolutely right, man. The worst is seeing like the locals like get their check on Fridays and they go right to the fucking casino and they just blow through it. It's fucking sad to see, man. Vegas is a fucking weird place, dude. I'm way over Vegas. People are like, oh, you going to Vegas? That's fucking awesome, dude. I've never been. I'm like, dude, it's nothing awesome about fucking Vegas.
Well, the good parts are really good. Like the restaurants are amazing. Vegas has some of the best restaurants.
Yeah.
They still have 24-hour pool halls.
I was just going to say, that's one thing that I like about Vegas. It's nothing's ever closed. You want a fucking burger, it's fucking 4 o'clock in the morning, go fucking get a burger somewhere. You want to go out, you want to have a drink, you want to play pool. Like we've done many a times, like late at night, middle of night. That's what I love about it. I'm a night owl for sure. Like I don't sleep like well at night. Like if I were to choose like just to like operate like from the sunset, like sundown, like to sun up, like and then sleep all day, like I would. Like other than laying in the sun, like I'm a night owl for sure. But that's the one thing I do like about Vegas. So it's nothing's ever closed.
It makes you feel weird. Like, why can't I buy a drink at 3 a.m.?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, how come I can't have a beer when I want to have a beer? Exactly. Like, am I a grown man?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's like after 2, everybody gets crazy. You gotta stop it.
That's
weird.
What's cool
that we
about
have time where like we tell you, look, you got to go to bed.
Yeah.
It's over.
As if it's going to like give us structure and like teach us lessons. And
but I guess it does.
It does, right?
Like the gambling thing.
Yep.
The thing about gambling is if gambling was everywhere, then it would normalize.
Right.
But it's not everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's just in a couple of spots. So when you get to it, that's when people are like up playing cards at fucking 5 o'clock in the morning, bleary-eyed, betting their mortgage.
Yeah. Pumping oxygen into the casinos.
So many people go there and lose everything. Everything they have.
I can't even fathom that. Like, it happens all the time. You see it. No, not really. You know what I mean? I'll entertain and play like some blackjack or something like that if like my buddies are playing, but I'm not really like I don't go out of my way to gamble. Like,
I like bets on fights.
I was just gonna say the same thing. Yeah. I like betting fights, I like doing stuff like that, or just whatever, bets with friends, whatever, but
betting fights just makes it more interesting.
Absolutely. Yep.
Like, you know, like give me $50 on this and then while you're watching it, you're like, come on, come
exactly.
on.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
And then you always feel real sneaky when you get a shit decision. You're like, ooh, we won that one. Yeah. We didn't deserve it. You know?
My buddy, one of the guys I train, Rico DeShulo, he bets fights and he is fucking spot on, man. He doesn't miss.
Really?
Oh, dude, I consult him between, because Marin in the truck, I'm always betting with Marin. We're always just like betting on fights. And I go right to my buddy, Rico. I'm like, Rico, what do you got? What do you like?
Did you consult him about this weekend?
Yes, and he was spot on with every fight except for one. I think Mateus Nicolo, who got caught by Dustin Ortiz. Mm. I think that was the only fight he missed.
That was a crazy head kick.
It was, man. And he set it up nice, too. He set it up real nice because, you know, it was like delayed.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's almost like one speed and then it changed direction. It changed speed and he went high with it. He set it up good. It was done.
Yeah,
done
it
well.
Almost like not a question mark kick, but it looked like he was going to the middle.
Bring that up.
He
real
went
quick,
up high.
Jamie. Take a peek at that. Because it's like he was establishing like a low kick at first, and then it's almost like he looked like it was going to throw a low kick, and then he changed the speed of the kick. I call it the delay. If you delay the kick and you change the timing of the kick, it's hard to read. That's how he caught him. He actually had a glove up too, oddly enough, but it went right through the glove. You know?
Yeah, it was a
Dustin
good angle.
Looked good though, man.
He looked
good.
Real good.
Yeah,
yeah.
He's a stud. You know.
Yeah, he really is. Well, they need people at that weight class.
Yeah.
I mean, who the fuck is there?
Yeah, you're
after
right.
this weekend.
Yeah.
Who's there? You know.
Good question.
I mean, unless TJ comes down or Cody comes down, depending upon who wins this fight.
Yeah.
Apparently, they can both make the weight.
And that's another thing, too. Wasn't Demetrius concerned with that he's going to commit to having a fight with one of them and then go through a full camp and then they miss weight and then he's fucked? So he said, like, take
fight
a fight.
Fight
I agree with that 100%. Yeah.
I do, but I don't think they would miss weight. Yeah. Those guys are super professional. Yeah. Both of them are. Yeah. And TJ had already said he'd made the weight before.
He has. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's tried it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got
interesting.
Down. Well, he seems smaller than he used to be.
I was just going
to
say, he's definitely a lot leaner than he used to be, you know.
Is this it here?
Yeah. What part of the fight do you want me to get to? They have these little things.
Just the knockout itself, the finish. The Dustin Ortiz finish against Mateus Nicola, was it?
I don't know why I go to that.
This is a chick fight, dude.
I don't know, I clicked on.
You don't know what you're doing,
right?
You
here.
Son of a bitch.
Sorry.
That kid, Mateus, though, Nicolo, he came through the gym through a couple of my Brazilian students, Saul and Rodrigo.
Here it is.
This kid's tough, man. So, Dustin, this is an impressive win, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there literally are.
See how it kind of delayed? Ooh. Do you see that?
Yeah, play that back again.
He changes speed in the kick. I noticed that in the replay when we were calling him. I was like, look at this, how he does this.
Let's see here.
Yeah.
It's right here.
Watch the speed change.
You see it? Yeah, in the beginning.
That's what made it difficult to read. It's kind of like.
It came up at a weird angle.
Yeah, it did. Yep.
It came up like at a 45-degree angle.
Yeah.
He won't let go.
Nope. Did he bonus for this fight?
I don't know.
I forget who bonuses.
I do not like bonuses. I do not like win bonuses. Mm. I don't like them. Mm-hmm. I don't think win bonuses. Because I don't think you should be paid more to win. Everyone's trying to win. Mm. I don't think you should lose because a fucking judge who has no idea what they're talking about. Look, he blocked that fairly decently.
Yeah, yeah. He had the glove up. Yeah.
And still got KO'd.
Right through.
Or just got rocked. I don't think, especially since they haven't dealt well at all with the judging issue. I mean, they really have done a terrible job with judging.
Yeah.
These state commissions.
Yeah.
There's so much bad judging.
I agree.
So if you have three people, I think the system sucks. I think the judging system itself, the 10-point must system, is outdated. Mm-hmm. It's not right for MMA. It's great for boxing. It's not good for MMA.
Yeah.
I think it needs to be revamped and restructured, and I think it should be a completely different system.
Yeah.
And then I think on top of that, the judges are incompetent. There's incompetence.
I was just going to say incompetence is what it really is.
You have those factors, and then you have win bonuses.
Yeah.
So you have bad decisions all the time, and
then
with these bad decisions, you give a win bonus to the wrong person, and the wrong person gets fucked over. You know, and the swing is half the pay.
Yeah, and at the level, the pay scale, it's just like they're already making fucking peanuts.
And if you're not making peanuts, it costs you more. Cost you $100,000. Cost you even more than that. And if you make $150 and $150, and then you should have won a fight and you lost. You lost $150,000 because those three people are incompetent.
That's right, exactly. Because they did a fucking 8-hour course on a Saturday and never fucking put a glove
on.
And
they don't care. This is the thing. They're not fans.
Yeah.
They just do that because that's their job.
And it's a cool job.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Tell their boys it's a cool job. There are some judges that do know what they're doing, so they're not...
Yeah, there's a small handful of them.
Yeah, there is. There is, yeah.
And they have to helicopter them in.
Pretty much.
It's a crazy system. The system badly needs to be updated. I don't understand why they haven't.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense to me.
I'm with you, homie.
But I don't like the win bonus thing, man. I just think you should get paid. It should be a flat rate like it is in boxing. Mm. You know, I don't think it incentivizes people to fight harder. I don't believe that. Yeah. I think the winners are always going to try to win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said about fighting, like don't fight technical. You go out there and you let it all hang out.
Don't do
that.
Yeah.
You're going to have a nice short career if you do that.
True.
And that's what happens to those guys.
It does, yeah.
It's good for the business. It's good for the company. It's good for that night, the views, the way the people are watching. Yep. It'll be a little bit more entertaining. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to make it. You're gonna leave half your brain in that octagon.
That's another thing, too, man. We talk about that all the time, too, is that seeing these guys take trauma the way they do, man. It's hard to watch, man, as much as – We've spoke about this briefly in the past, but you know, as much as a fan as I am, and as involved as I am in the sport, man, it's hard to watch sometimes, man. Seeing these guys take the damage they do, you know. I remember, like I told you, I think I told you a story before. Marcus Davis, after his fight, coincidentally enough, I believe with Chris Lytle, he lost his sense of smell for like 7 months.
Yeah.
He couldn't smell. I remember I told you about this, but you know, he couldn't smell like anything, which means he can't taste. So like he'd be like, bro, I'd smell like shit. And like people would have to tell me like, bro, you fucking stink. And then he'd be like, I put on too much cologne, and be like, bro, easy on the cologne. Like he had no clue. Like, you know, he couldn't taste, like lemonade tastes like fucking fruit punch. He had no fucking clue. He had no sense of smell or taste.
Whoa.
For 7 months. Imagine that.
At least it came back.
Thank God it did, yeah. But he even said, I was like, what'd you miss the most? Like, and he's like, the smell of my daughter's hair. And I was like, whoa.
Ooh.
So that's fucking trippy, dude.
And he kept fighting.
I was like,
fighting
check,
after
please.
That.
Like, I'm all set.
And he kept fighting.
Dude, that was on, I don't want to say early in his career, but maybe halfway through.
Well, he, again, came from that school of hard knocks in Boston with the
Joe
hard
Lake.
Sparring.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Hard sparring, you know, hard training. And
that's what I was saying about Jeremy Stephens earlier, to bring it all back around. Jeremy spars hard. You know, I was talking to Jocko about it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, Jeremy's an animal.
Yeah. So I remember discussing that with Lorenzo back in the day as he went to Brazil when they were doing the Aldo pieces and whatnot, and he went to Novandão, and he said, man, these fucking guys kill each other in the gym.
Yeah.
He's like, it's like literally like they're 100% headhunting, trying to kill each other. I don't agree with that at all,
no,
obviously.
You know, not
it's
good.
It's horrible.
And there's so many guys that get really badly rocked mm-hmm. on their way to fights.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
then
all the time. Yeah. If it, like sometimes like if a guy takes a big punch like and he gets a flash KO like in the gym, like if we got to pull him from a fight because of that, because he's affected at that point. It's
yes.
it's like still, you know, there's residual like there, you know, I mean, it's still lingering.
No way around it.
No way around it, man.
Yeah.
I even had like a student of mine, my guy Tommy, ended up, he had gotten into a car accident, you know, like a week before his fight. And this kid's got a granite chin and he got caught. Like, and we attributed to the impact of the car crash. Like, we said it had to have been like you suffered some head trauma because he hit his head in the car crash. And
wow.
he was susceptible. He was vulnerable to the KO because of the trauma that he took. So you're taking big punches in the gym like that and then you go on fight night. It's that much easier for you to get lights out, you know?
Yeah, 100%. But it's so hard to make a tough elite fighter without
yeah.
subjecting them to
yeah,
like
exactly.
real.
Well, you see, like Robbie Lawler, like he's talked about, he doesn't spar anymore. Like,
well, he didn't for a long time.
He didn't
time.
For a
and
long
then
time.
He
okay.
did when he went to ATT.
Okay,
but he, for a long time he didn't.
Yeah,
yeah. Like all through his Strikeforce career, he
right.
didn't spar, which I seems mean, crazy. Like it, I already know how to fight. Like, okay, I'm not going to argue with you.
Yeah, I was just going to say that boy can't fight. You can't argue with that.
He definitely knows
man.
How to fight.
He can fucking fight that guy.
You know,
he's had a lot of fight, a lot of tough fights.
That's why I was so impressive with Rafael Dos Anjos did to him.
Mm.
It's like Dos Anjos just sort of dismantled him.
I didn't see that coming.
And then Colby Covington
oh.
dismantled Dos Anjos. I was like, what in the hell?
Oh.
He took him apart,
dude. Gas tank for days.
Yeah, that
relentless
dude's
fucking pressure.
Crazy.
I got tired watching the fucking fight. I was gassed in the truck. Like,
and meanwhile, Dos Anjos known for his cardio. He's one of Nick
yep.
Kurson's pupils. So he's like, you know, trains in that Marv Marinovich style.
I honestly, like, around the second round, I was like, there's no way he can keep this pace up. He's got to fade. And he never fucking faded. He never faded.
Did you see him hand the belt to Donald Trump?
I was looking at it on the way here. I was looking at it. I was like, that's crazy. It said something like on MMA Junkie, like he comes through with his, as stated, he
yes.
comes through. And I was
he
just
said
like,
he's going to bring the belt
dude,
to the White House.
He's got fucking Donald Trump with a strap over his shoulder.
It's so funny, man.
He's a madman.
He's got the MAGA hat on. Big
said he had the red
face.
Hat on.
Dude, he's fucking sold it, man.
He has, man.
He's so, and you got to remember, early in Colby's career, he wasn't like that.
Yeah.
He wasn't
yeah.
like that. He just figured it
did
out.
He, where did he come from? I know he's at ATT.
Oregon?
But where was he training before ATT?
That's a good question. Hmm. I do not know.
Because he kind of, I don't want to say came out of nowhere. Like he earned his way in, but he really like, it was
look
like, there
that.
It is. Sick fucking bastard.
With the fucking,
I love it.
It's so funny that a red hat with white letters can get you punched now. I mean, it could say anything. One, this girl had a hat on that said, make Bitcoin great again. And they fucking, they
what's
pepper
that hat say on Kobe?
Face.
What's the hat
make
say?
Make America great
make
again.
Make America great, right, yeah.
Yeah. But a hilarious. Red hat with white letters is racist now.
Unbelievable.
That might as well be a Nazi flag to some
dude,
people.
This
gone so crazy.
It is crazy
it's
right now, dude.
It's such a topsy-turvy world we're living in.
Burning flags and shit. It's ridiculous.
Well, listen, brother, we got to get out of here.
Yeah, we got to go to the weigh-ins, man.
Get to the weigh-ins. It's at 3 o'clock today, right?
I believe so.
I think 3 o'clock at the Orpheum.
Yeah, and it's probably a 3-hour drive.
Della Grate Karate. Sit your tongue in Boston. Tell people how they can get to your gym.
Look me up, man.
Literally
Facebook.
One of the very best
thank
Muay Thai gyms and MMA gyms on the planet Earth.
Thank
and
you,
it's in
brother.
Somerville. Oh. Spell it.
SITYODTONG.
Sit your tongue.
Yes. Sir.
And it's in Boston, Massachusetts.
Awesome.
Don't sleep. Mark Della Grate. Love you, buddy.
Love you, bro.
We're
thank you for
fun.
Having me, man. Absolutely.
Right.
Let's do it.
See ya.